From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But they're coming to the finish, and it is all Barbaro. It is sublime performance. He runs away from them all, and he has saved something left for the Preakness. Barbaro wins by 7.
Musket Man charging, and Mind That Bird on the far outside. The Derby winner, Mind That Bird, closing a late gap. But it is Rachel Alexandra. She's simply above and beyond them. A filly has won the Preakness.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Senyata, 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 and Flying Flame trying to hold on. Flame and Senyata. The Flame has won it ahead. Senyata ran her heart out but had to settle for second.
Oh, they've opened up a six-length lead here with 1 furlong to run. They've left the field railing behind. American Freedom and Gunrunner are 5 behind Arrowgate. What a commanding performance. He won the Travers by 12.
Now, here's Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Equine Forum here on Horse Radio. I'm Anthony Stabile alongside my tag team partner. Well, we're not really alongside. We're about 1,280 miles away from each other. Bobby Newman, as our man Steve from Baltimore just pointed out, the race day boys are taking over the Equine Forum on this final Saturday in February. We're sitting in for the Baron Mike Penna. 3 big hours of Equine Forum coming your way. We'll have the usual weekly segments for you. And, of course, plenty of guests. A couple of Hall of Famers going to bookend the show. Shug McGahee going to join us right away in the first segment. I'm going to wrap things up with fellow Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen. Shug, of course, has the favorite in the Fountain of Youth, Greatest Honor, who took down the Holy Bull about a month ago down at Gulfstream Park. And Steve Asmussen brings back Jackie's Warrior, horse who was well on his way to 2-year-old honors before a bit of a tough trip in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, defeated by Essential Quality that afternoon. Those two will hook back up in the twice-postponed Southwest. They're finally going to run it today down at Oaklawn Park, albeit on a wet track. It looks like there's plenty of rain yesterday. The track was sloppy yesterday. There's some fog rolling in down there this morning. Just took a look at the weather. And there's a little bit of rain maybe later on today, but kind of hard to get that moisture off the racetrack. You know, it's a national park status down there at Oaklawn Park. A lot of people don't know this. They can't do a lot to the racing surface. They can't treat it with certain chemicals, which is why part of the reason they moved opening day up to the end of January, right? They pushed back a little bit to the end of January because they were losing so many days of tracks freezing. And, of course, we saw all the snow they had, which cost them an entire week of racing last week. But they're going to finally run it today, getting some moisture in that track for sure. And we'll see how that affects the matchup. And really, you know, with all eyes on the Kentucky Derby trail, most eyes anyway, this time of year, this is what happens. It's an interesting pair of races today. Hush of the Storm got some points last night in the John Battaglia Memorial over at Turfway Park. And now today, you take a look, and it's really a tale of two cities. Right in Hot Springs, it's the matchup. It's Essential Quality, the 2-year-old champ, the Breeders' Cup winner, taking on the horse who he knocked off the throne in Jackie's Warrior, who trainer Steve Asmussen wants to give another chance around the two turns, obviously. Whereas down at Gulfstream Park, it kind of feels like it's Greatest Honor's race to lose. He's 9-5 on the morning line. I think anybody who likes Greatest Honor would happily sign up for those fixed odds at 9-5 right now. He'll likely be more like 3-5 when the wagering ends. I just don't know, and we'll talk about this later on the show. I just don't know where else you're going to want to go. Prime Factor didn't really do a lot of running in that Holy Bull last time out when Greatest Honor beat him over 9 lengths. Beat Tarantino almost 6 lengths. I guess you can go there, or you can go to Fire at Will. thankfully, we have you covered on that front. We're going to be joined by trainer Mike Maker later on in the program. He'll talk to us about Fire at Will. He'll talk to us about some of the other stakes horses he has. And Shug not only has greatest honor in today at Gulfstream Park, Shug has a nice little stakes trio today. He's got Scarlet Sky in the Palm Beach. He, of course, has greatest honor. And he has Performer, who figures to go all favored in the Windstar Gulfstream Park Mile. So Shug looking at perhaps three favorites on that stakes-laden card, 14 races at Gulfstream, 9 of them stakes, some different post times today, 11:30 at Gulfstream. If you're following the action down in Hallandale Beach, 1:05 here at the Big A. I'll be in the booth at Aqueduct after we wrap the Equine Forum. The Stymie, Mr. Buff. Man, he's such a cool horse. Looking forward to getting a call, the Stymie and Mr. Buff later on today at the Big A. But again, 1:05 post. You can watch the action today. A lot of the stakes action from around the country, including that Fountain of Youth and the Southwest, going to be on America's Day at the races. You can check your local listings. Fox Sports 1, Fox Sports 2. Check the local listings. You can check NYRA.com as well. They have all the broadcast information. So it leads us to our poll question. And there's a lot of great stakes action on the docket this week, this weekend. The Byakoa tomorrow has the return of Monomoy Girl, two-time Breeders' Cup Distaff winner. But again, it's Derby season. So the question is simple. Are you looking, what race, what prep are you looking most forward to today? Is it the matchup between Essential Quality and Jackie's Warrior in the Southwest at Oaklawn Park? Or is it Greatest Honor and the other 9 set to face him in the Fountain of Youth down at Gulfstream Park? That is your poll question for today. And, of course, our poll question is brought to you by our friends over at OwnerView. Supposed to have Gary on today, but Gary wanted to let things get going a little bit. So Gary will join us a couple of weeks, I would say. So your OwnerView and that Thoroughbred Owner Conference, they bring you that poll question. Hit us up at HRRN on Twitter, and we will read some of your responses throughout the day today. Of course, vote on the poll. Give us your reasons why. Give us a little explanation. Maybe tell us who you like. But the question is, what race are you looking most forward to? And it could be any reason. You think maybe one of them is going to have more Triple Crown implications than the other. Maybe you're like me and you want to see the matchup. If I were voting in that poll question, I would say the Southwest, because I'm looking forward to seeing the matchup between Essential Quality and Jackie's Warrior. I kind of think the Fountain of Youth is a foregone conclusion unless Fire at Will comes with a big shot. Speaking of Fire at Will, we have a loaded program for you today. We told you about Shug. We told you about Steve Asmussen. Mike Maker is going to join us later on. Sol Kumin, who bought back into Monomoy Girl after the big sale in November. Sol's going to join us to talk about getting back with her. And Pete Aiello, the voice of Gulfstream Park. They got 9 stakes down at Gulfstream today. So we'll bring Pete Aiello into the mix later on to talk about all of the great action down at Gulfstream Park. Bobby, say hello to everyone.
Hello, everyone. It's a beautiful Saturday here in South Florida. Going to be somewhere in the mid-80s and a perfect day for this huge card at Gulfstream.
Yeah, big card at Gulfstream. Bobby will be on site. We'll take a stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker later on. Bobby will call all the three-year-olds, presented by Spendthrift Farm as well. We'll go in the room with Sean Clancy. Lots going on here on this Saturday morning. Of course, the Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. We'll take a break. We'll come back, kick things off. One of my favorites, Hall of Famer Shug McGahee, joins us after the break. You're listening to the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Oscar Performance, the pinnacle of success as a precocious juvenile and again at 3.
Oscar Performance, bravo! He wins the juvenile turf.
Oscar Performance has won the Secretary of State's.
Oscar Performance goes all the way in the Belmont Derby Invitational.
And the pinnacle of success at 4, equaling the world record for a mile in the Grade 3 Poker and dominating the competition in the Grade 1 Woodbine Mile.
But it's Oscar Performance shrugs them off. A gate-to-wire winner.
Oscar Performance, standing at Millridge.
Climax Stallions is coming to New York with Mr. Monomoy. At 3, Mr. Monomoy dominated the Grade 2 Risen Star Stakes at Fairgrounds, going wire to wire.
Mr. Monomoy leads them home in the first division of the Risen Star Stakes.
He's also a half-brother to two-time Breeders' Cup Distaff winner, Monomoy Girl. Mr. Monomoy, standing in New York at Waldorf Farm for $5,000. For more information, visit ClimaxStallions.com.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
Broken Vow, a top 15 lifetime active sire with over 170 black type horses, 90 black type winners, and approaching $80 million in progeny earnings. In 2020, Broken Vow produced Saratoga Springs winner Stan the Man and the Speedy M Primus, winner of the $700,000 turf sprint. Juvenile stakes horses include the Grass is Blue and Chasing Kara. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire, Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
This is Wesley Ward. I'm the conqueror of Royal Ascot. I listen to HRN.
Sitting on Go has 10 lengths to raise and less than 5/16 to raise it, as now the pace quickens. Prime Factor is up to challenge Tarantino. Greatest Honor throws his hat into the ring on the far outside, and he's charging hard. Greatest Honor is taking the lead now. Less than a quarter of a mile to go, and Greatest Honor starts to get away. Prime Factor didn't have much of a punch when he was called on. Tarantino's going to try to fight him off for second, but they're all battling for minor placings behind Cortland Farms' Greatest Honor. He's an easy winner under Jose Ortiz. Five in front in the end. Tarantino fought back for second. Prime Factor was third. Then Papa 2 in 143. Left.
Pete Aiello. He'll join us later on the Equine Forum. He was on the call of the January 30th Holy Bull down at Gulfstream Park. It was all Greatest Honor, a coming out party, if you will. Welcome back to this Equine Forum here on HRRN. Nice enough to join us now, Hall of Famer Shug McGahee, who's going to saddle Greatest Honor. He's got three others on the Saturday Gulfstream card. Remember, 11:30 first post. A couple of favorites in the other stakes as well. Shug, it's Anthony and Bobby here on the Equine Forum. Thanks for some time on a busy Saturday morning.
Yeah, no, hi. Good morning, guys.
Shug, let's talk about this horse, Greatest Honor. We spoke to you on race day before the Holy Bull, and I think you were looking forward to running him. Did you expect that kind of performance from him that day?
Well, I thought he would run well, but I was a little surprised at how well he ran. You know, I mean, it was kind of a step up from a maiden race into the stake the way it was. You know, but he had been prepped pretty good, you know, from Saratoga on to end of January. So, yeah, I was cautiously optimistic he was going to run really well, but I didn't really expect that, no.
He was a lot, I guess tactical is the word. He was into the bit. He seemed a little bit more into the race. Was that something you had worked on in the morning? Or was that something that where, you know, you had talked about the light bulb kind of coming on last time. Was that maybe a combination of the two?
I think so, Tony. I thought Jose rode him really well. You know, he got him away from there and saved some ground. He had him in good position going down the backside to where, you know, if he had horse, he was going to be able to have a chance to win. I think that's, you know, a trait of a good rider is having a spot where they can win. And, you know, I don't think he's the kind of horse that's got, even though he looked like it the other day, that he's really quick going to horses. I think his stride is so long, he just gets to them easy. And so, you know, I think as earlier, and not by design, those 7-8 races probably set him up for the longer races to where, you know, he learned how to finish and learned how to get dirt in his face and those kind of things. So, you know, I think everything just sort of kind of came together, you know, in the Holy Bull.
Chuck, this is Bobby. Is there anything different when you're going to a race like the Fountain of Youth where you have – is there anything different where you know that you've got one of the Derby favorites right now and a horse that everybody is talking about as compared to going into the Holy Bowl where you have a relative unknown and greatest honor, other than having to talk to people like Anthony and me before the race? Is there any different in the regiment, or is it same as always for the team?
Well, from, you know, I mean, there was no change in the regimen by any means, but, you know, I wanted him to show me what I wanted to see. And last Sunday, I thought his race at, his work at Payson Park was really, really good. And, so, you know, our plan was to go forward, but that really put the icing on the cake was when he worked good. And, you know, I brought him down here and schooled him on Wednesday in the paddock. And, you know, I was really pleased with his appearance and, you know, sort of the way he acted. And, you know, so as I say, we're looking forward to this afternoon or tonight, whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, alluding to a 6:10 post time scheduled for that Fasig Tipton Fountain of Youth later on. Sure, you're big on letting a horse tell you how they're doing. I think a lot of trainers are, but you're probably, you know, you're part of that old guard that really lets them tell you how they're doing. You have a plan, but you also let the horse talk to you, if you will. I was a little surprised this horse was coming back in the Fountain of Youth. Was this the plan? I know you said the plan was to go forward, but did you have this stuck in your head, all right, I want to get him to the Fountain of Youth? Or did you ever think about skipping this and going straight to the Florida Derby or another one of those final prep races?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously I was trying to think of all the scenarios and what was best, and that was why I was saying I wanted to see what I saw last Sunday. You know, if I hadn't been altogether pleased with the way that he worked, then I would have waited, obviously. His running style going a mile and eighth is going to suit a whole lot better. But, you know, we got 10 points in the Holy Bull. And I kind of hate to say this because I always think that if a horse deserves to be in the Derby, usually they're in it. But say we didn't, we finished fourth in the Florida Derby or something, then, you know, maybe we wouldn't have that opportunity. And so that went into my thinking just a tad bit. But basically, I just like sort of the way he was doing. And, you know, as Seth Hancock told me a long time ago, he said, these things are made to run. So we're running.
Shug, in addition to greatest honor, you've got three other runners on the card, including Performer, who will probably be favored in the Grade 2 Gulfstream Park Mile, goes as the ninth race today. Performer's won 6 of his 8 career starts. Getting a new rider today, Joel Rosario is out of town, Jose Ortiz aboard for the first time. Is this something where you go over strategy with Jose, or does Jose know what to do getting on Performer for the first time?
Well, he knows what to do, but I'll talk to him about, you know, what I think. That's why I've been sitting here looking at the race pretty close to see what, you know, what I think if everything goes right, how it will develop. As you know, you got the break kind of determines that. But, I'll go over with him. I feel very good with Jose being riding him. And, you know, I think that maybe hopefully I'm bringing a better horse into this race than we did in the Fred Hooper back a month ago. You know, I had him down here the other day. I mean, he had an excellent work last Sunday, too, at Payson, and brought him down here and schooled him on Wednesday also, and was very pleased with his appearance. You know, he looked like, you know, I mean, I had to train him pretty hard to get him ready for the Cigar Mile, and, you know, I think maybe it might have been might have taken a little bit out of him, the training and the race over that kind of a track. So I think that maybe today, looks-wise, we're running a better horse. Now, what that adds up to, you know, who knows. But then again, I'm looking forward to running him.
We're big fans of this horse. It looks like to us on the outside that he's a horse that doesn't really like the inside. And he finally gets out of that inside draw. He's had the rail the last two starts. He had the two hole at Belmont in an allowance race. And even though he's run well in all of those races, is this a horse who you're appreciating getting off the rail with this one turn mile?
Yeah, I didn't want to get the one post anymore. You know what I mean? He's down in there the other day with Joel. You know, he said, you know, I'm going along, and I look down on the inside. I'm looking up, and these horses are in front of me going pretty easy. So he said, I thought I better get him to the outside so he didn't get have a chance of getting some trouble. And, you know, but thinking back, most of his better races have been when he's free. And, you know, I'll go over that with Jose in the paddock today.
In addition to performer and greatest honor, you actually have another horse who may go favored in a stake, the Palm Beach Stakes for three-year-olds at a mile and a 16th on the turf, and you send out Scarlet Sky, who also will be ridden by Jose Ortiz for the first time. Scarlet Sky coming in off a resounding win against allowance competition in his last start. How's he doing, and what are you looking for from him today?
Well, I mean, you know, his first few races were good, and then he threw a clunker in at Aqueduct. I don't know whether it was a turf or what the deal was, but, you know, then he came back, even if it was a short, overmatched field. I really liked the way he ran the other day. He set in the seam really good. Johnny, you know, sat and waited for it to open up, and when it opened up, he was there, and the race was over with. And, you know, it's the reason Johnny didn't ride him today is because he was supposed to, you know, he was going to Saudi Arabia, but he didn't get to go, and the criteria wouldn't have let him ride here. So, but I mean, Jose knows him. They wanted to ride him when it came up. So that was fine with me. And, you know, after I'd given a call to Jose and then all that went on with those riders, I wasn't going to change after I'd committed. And, you know, it's a step up for him. You know, there's a couple pretty nice horses in there. Who knows how good the horse of Mott's is. So we'll see. But, I mean, his works, then again, have been exceptionally good at Payson. He worked on the turf up there last Sunday. And, you know, he was very impressive in what he did. But, you know, he's – you know, when you go over in the afternoon, these aren't works, but he's showing all the signs that he should run a good race.
Speaking with Shug McGahey, who has four horses on the big card at Gulfstream today, including the favorites in the Palm Beach Stakes, in the Gulfstream Park Mile, and of course the featured race, the Fountain of Youth. Shug, I don't want to keep you too long, but when you have horses like this that are either up and coming or you know are already stakes quality, how far down the line are you looking as far as making plans? I know you never know what's going to happen today, but aside from a horse like Greatest Honor, where obviously the Kentucky Derby is somewhere down the road if everything goes well, how far are you looking for horses like Scarlet Sky, like Performer, for where maybe you want them to be down later in the year?
Well, Performer, the main reason I'm running in a mile here is looking for two-turn race later on, and I didn't really think it'd be fair to run him a mile and eighth, whether it was here or at Aqueduct in the Excelsior, which would probably be where I will go, you know, off one-mile race in a while, you know. And as I said before, I trained him pretty hard for the Cigar Mile, and I didn't really want to have to do that again. You know, he's 5 years old, and you know, I'm hoping for a winning effort with him on this afternoon, but I'm also, you know, get a good solid race into him, so I'd feel a little bit better about him going a mile and eighth around two turns, which, as we all know, can be a kind of a taxing race, especially, you know, a horse that's you know, is fairly lightly raced. In other words, he had three starts in, you know, 15, 16 months. And so that's kind of the thinking with him. And with Scarlet Sky, you know, I just like to see a good effort here and, you know, either take him to Kentucky and run him or see what's at Aqueduct. But obviously, if he's that kind, you know, we'd like to be able to participate in the grass series for three-year-olds at Belmont and Saratoga.
Once again, speaking with Hall of Fame trainer Shug McGahee. Shug, we really appreciate you taking our time from your busy schedule today to speak with us about some of these great up-and-coming runners that you're going to have at Gulfstream Park. We wish you the very best racing luck, and you've got a long day ahead of you, my friend. I know it's always a long day for the trainers, but on these 14 race days where you have one in the first and one in the last, you better get a nice, comfortable seat.
Well, my nice, comfortable seat to be go over and watch them run and come back here and watch some of the other racing on television. You know, not only do they have a great card down here, but, you know, look at Oaklawn and you get to see those races down there too. So, it's going to be a long day, but I think it's going to be a little bit shorter because of all the activity that's going on. I mean, you know, you got the half brothers of Chardonnay in today, and there's some others in that maiden race that are pretty solid. And so, you know, those and the other stakes that are here, I mean, I'm a big fan of Butch Reed's filly and the Devonna Dale, so I'm going to enjoy watching that and the other races too. So, it's first to last is a long time, but there's a lot of activities on TV that are going to keep me interested.
Once again, Shug McGahee, who trains Greatest Honor Performer Scarlet Sky, three of the four that he runs today. Shug, best of luck. We appreciate you joining us on the Equine Forum.
Okay, Bobby and Anthony, thank you guys.
Thanks so much. It's time now for the Lexus Legends of the Turf, presented by Lexus of Lexington.
On October 27, 1974, at Woodbine in suburban Toronto, Canada, the 37th running of the Canadian International Championship Stakes over the testing distance of 13 furlongs was the feature race on the card. There were better than 25,000 fans on hand in typically resplendent autumn weather, with the foliage appearing as though Mother Nature had reached down with tender tendrils to paint the countryside in the splendiferous golden hues of the season. There was a young lady in the field who had already chalked up stakes scores in four different countries and was bidding to become the very first ever to have won stakes in five different countries. She was an elegant, lovely, statuesque young lady who simply exuded class, looked every bit the part, and she was a Kentucky bred. She was by Vaguely Noble out of Charming Alibi by Honey's Alibi and was racing in the silks of Nelson Bunker Hunt. She had won the Prix Yacoulef in France at two. At three, she had scored in the Irish Guinness Oaks, the King George VI and Queen Elizabeth Stakes in England, and the Prix Saint-Hilaire, the Prix de la Grotte, and the Prix Niais in France. And further, she had humiliated an outstanding field of international runners in the Washington, D.C. International, an invitational at Laurel Park in Maryland. At four, her age at the time of the event being recapitulated, she had won stakes in three countries: the Grand Prix de la Saint-Cloud in France, the King George and Queen Elizabeth Stakes, and the Benson and Hedges Gold Cup in England, and the Man of War Stakes right here in America. She was already a thoroughbred millionaireess, and this race, if she won it, would add another $91,000-plus to her already most imposing bankroll. She went postwards in this race at odds on, 85 cents to the dollar. Her bevy of backers were not the least bit disappointed with her effort this day. On a firm grass course, she toted her 123-pound impost to front-running fractions of 47-1 for a half, 137-3 for a mile, and a final time of 2:40 for the 1 5/8 miles, while winning with veritable ease. She had in the process clipped a full second off the course record for the distance set by X in 1963, and she went the distance in 1 4/5 seconds faster than Secretariat had done just the year before in his winning effort. She had become the world's leading money-winning distaffer and had pulled off something never done before in the entire illustrious annals of thoroughbred racing history. She won stakes races in five different countries: England, Ireland, France, America, and now Canada. She did have a nemesis, a la Noor de Citation, or affirmed to Aladar. That horse was named Ale France. The latter defeated our subject for this piece on all six occasions when they met over three racing seasons. Her lifetime statistics, 12 wins and 23 trips to the post, with composite earnings of better than $1,200,000, this classy lassie who personified elegance, grace, poise, and stature on the racetrack, who firmly planted her hoof marks in the pages of Cronald racing history with capital letters and capped off a marvelous career with that win at Woodbine, October 27, 1974, was the great Dahlia.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Lexington today, and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at Lexus of Lexington, and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes every fall. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Flatter. This prolific son of AP Indy has sired over 100 stakes horses. Recent top runners include Eclipse champion West Coast and Sovereign Award winner Avies Flatter. His yearlings topped the Phasic Tipton July sale 2 years in a row, and his two-year-olds brought up to $600,000. Success on the track, success in the ring. Flatter. Standing at Claiborne Farm.
Racing fans, you can watch every Santa Anita race free of charge at santaanita.com/live, and you can watch and wager at First Bet. That's first.com/bet. Make plans to join us online this weekend on Saturday. Three-year-olds will go 1 mile on turf in the $100,000 Pasadena Stakes, and on Sunday, California breds four and up will go 1 mile on the main track in the $100,000 Tis Now. Looking ahead to one of the biggest days of the year, next Saturday, March 6th, we'll have five stakes, including the Grade 1 Santa Anita Handicap, the Grade 2 San Felipe, the Grade 1 Frankie Kilroy Mile, and the Grade 2 San Carlos. That's all on Big Cap Day, Saturday, March 6th. And don't forget a pair of low takeout wagers late in the card each racing day, the $5 Golden Hour Double and a $1 Golden Hour Pick 4. With first post time at 12:30, join us early at 11:20 a.m. as track announcer Frank Miramati and Tom Quigley handicap each day's card at santaanita.com/live.
I'm three-time Derby winning jockey Gary Stevens.
This is Rosie Napravnik.
Hi, my name is Sean Bridgman.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia, and I'm listening to Horse Racing Radio.
Top of the stretch, Jakarta, the leader, chased by Stillwater Cove. Two lengths between them. Surrender now third into Mystic. Fourth up on the outside as they come to the final furlong. Into Mystic, making a more serious bid now, coming after Jakarta. Jakarta into Mystic. Got Stormy. He's going to be running late down the far outside, but the wire's coming. Into Mystic, short lead. Here's Got Stormy running on. Jakarta toward the rail. Into Mystic. Got Stormy is still trying at the wire. Photo for the win in the Buffalo Chase, Franklin County. It will either be Got Stormy or Into Mystic for that top spot.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum. Bobby Newman and Anthony Stabile on a beautiful Saturday morning. Anthony Stabile in New York, Bobby Newman here in sunny South Florida, getting ready for a tremendous day of racing around the country. Nine stake races on the card. You heard it correctly. Nine stakes races on the Gulfstream Park card today. First post, I believe, is 11:30 a.m. Eastern time, so just 30 minutes after the Equine Forum ends this morning. Of course, the featured race is the Fountain of Youth. They've got big races at Oaklawn Park as well today. The Razorback takes place. Finally, the Southwest Stakes, $750,000 on the line and 10 valuable Derby points. Essential Quality, the two-year-old champ, is back again. And he faces Jackie's Warrior once again. Jackie's Warrior, the beaten favorite in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, the race that helped Essential Quality become a champion two-year-old last year. They renew acquaintances in the $750,000 Southwest Stakes at Oaklawn Park later today. Of course, there's a great stake racing at Aqueduct as well. And we saw, actually, a Derby prep last night, the John Battaglia Memorial up at Turfway Park. There were 10 valuable Derby points on the line. The favorite was Gretzky the Great, who was last seen running mid-pack on the turf in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf at Keeneland. Before that, he was a Grade 1 winner. He won the Summer Stakes on the turf at Woodbine. He had won on synthetic surface in the past, but he didn't get the job done last night. Hush of a storm for trainer Bill Morey. Jockey Santiago Gonzalez getting the win in the John Battaglia Memorial. Hush of a Storm did not run very well in his debut at Churchill on conventional dirt back in November. That was at the maiden $150,000 claiming level. So a strange race right there. Basically, those races written so the really high-priced horses don't go in. You know, the Bafferts, the Chad Browns, the Todd Pletchers that maybe cost $500,000, $750,000, $1 million, they're not going to be offered up for $150,000 in their debut. So it's a maiden special weight race, kind of. Maiden special weight for horses that, you know, don't want to be claimed for $150,000. That being said, Hush of a Storm didn't run very well in that race. Went to Turfway. He found the synthetic surface way more to his liking. Won a maiden race going a mile, won an optional claiming allowance race going a mile, and then last night steps up in big fashion and takes the $100,000 John Battaglia Memorial for three-year-olds at a mile and a 16th. Question is, will they go down the Triple Crown trail with Hush of a Storm? He is nominated to the Triple Crown. We'll see. Or do they keep him on synthetic surface? Maybe try him on the turf at some point. He's by Creative Clause out of a flatter mare. Certainly a lot of options when it comes to that runner. Speaking of lots of options, lots of wagering options today at Gulfstream Park, and we'll dive into it a little bit more later today when we have Pete Aiello, the track announcer from Gulfstream, on with us. But let's look real quickly at some of the other races that are on today's card. We talked briefly about the Fountain Youth. We talked briefly about the Gulfstream Park Mile. We talked briefly about the Palm Beach. There are some other very interesting stakes in here. Starting with the third race on the card, this is the Here Comes the Bride, a Grade 3 event for three-year-old fillies going a mile and a 16th on the turf. And a field of eight set to go to post and marks the return of a pretty exciting two-year-old filly from last year in Toby's Heart. And I know this is a filly that Anthony Stabile, my partner, loves, and he has been waiting a long time, just as many other people have, to see Toby's Heart return. We first got a glimpse of Toby's Heart in a maiden race at Churchill Downs, going 5.5 furlongs on the turf. She did not break very well that day. She was about 6 or 7 lengths back at the first call, and not only did she get up and win the race, she won by 7 lengths. It's a move you rarely see with any runners, let alone two-year-olds, let alone two-year-olds sprinting on the turf. You just don't see it. She was awesome that afternoon. And off that big maiden win, she shipped up to Saratoga and tried Stakes Company and was bet all the way down to 1-2, broke a little bit better, still not great out of the gate, broke a little bit better, wasn't quite as far back, and closed to get the win. Final time for the 5.5 furlongs was 1:02.1. Now, if you remember, the turf course at Saratoga last summer was yielding some very, very fast times. That being said, Toby's Heart was very, very impressive. Now, we haven't seen her since August, and she comes back in a stake going a mile and a 16th. So there are some question marks regarding this daughter of Jack Milton, who's out of a Lil's Lad mare. You know, I don't know personally if that breeding is better, you know, if you would think more route than sprint. I think, you know, it's kind of an either way. You know, Jack Milton himself was a router. Lil's Lad was pretty much good at everything he did. So I don't know if Toby's Heart, if this is the right spot, if Toby's Heart can be as good routing as she has been sprinting. But obviously, trainer Brian Lynch, who's also the co-owner of Toby's Heart, thinks that this is the way to go. And she's just another one that Jose Ortiz rides that has a big shot boy, Jose Ortiz. I mean, he just rides a lot of favorites or, you know, well-meant runners in these big stakes at Gulfstream today. But it will not be a walkover for Toby's Heart. In fact, Toby's Heart may not be the favorite in the Here Comes the Bride. She's actually the third choice on the morning line. The second choice is Con Lima for Todd Pletcher, who's been first or second in all seven of her career starts, including a second-place finish last time out in the Grade 3 Swedish Chant behind White Frost. White Frost did not decide to run in the Here Comes the Bride. The morning line favorite, though, is Spanish Love Affair from Mark Cassie and Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners. Spanish Love Affair to be ridden by Tyler Gaffleone. He's ridden her last two starts as well. She started her career at Gulfstream Park routing on the turf. In fact, she was 2-for-2 at Gulfstream. She broke her maiden by 11 lengths, came back in the Sharp Susan, and won by just over a length. Then she tried Deeper Waters, the Grade 2 Jessamine at Keeneland, finished second to Aunt Pearl. Once again, ran against Aunt Pearl in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf, and we all know how that ended up. Aunt Pearl just ran away and hid from that field. It was just a phenomenal effort, and Spanish Love Affair could do no better than sixth, beaten about five lengths. But she obviously was facing the best of the best when it came to the two-year-olds last year. We'll see if she's progressed for her three-year-old campaign. I can say this, if Spanish Love Affair is better as a three-year-old than she was as a two-year-old, and most runners are, she's going to be awfully tough to beat. And a filly like Toby's Heart, like Con Lima, they're probably going to have to improve to beat Spanish Love Affair. She certainly looks like she's going to be very dangerous in this race. There is going to be pace in there. Con Lima's got speed. Male Order's got speed. Could play into the hands of both Spanish Love Affair and Toby's Heart. Going to be an exciting renewal of the Here Comes the Bride, the fourth race on the card at Gulfstream today. Goes at 12:55 Eastern Time. And this is the Grade 2 $200,000 McDermott, a mile and three-eighths on the turf for the four-year-olds and up. And trainer Mike Maker has this race surrounded. He sends out three of the eight runners in the race. Brian Lynch has two of the runners in the race. And it's a very evenly matched race. Morning line favorite is number three, Tide of the Sea, one of the Mike Maker trainees. Tide of the Sea beat stablemate Temple when they last faced off in the Grade 3 W.L. McKnight at Gulfstream Park back on January 23rd. That was a day that Tide of the Sea was able to make the lead very easily and unpressured. Went 48-3 to the half, 1:12-2 for six furlongs, then sped it up 2:03 for the mile and a quarter, and zoomed home 2:24-2 for the mile and a half. The difference between that day and today is a horse named Phantom Currency, one of the Brian Lynch trainees. Phantom Currency, like Tide of the Sea, is a horse who really is best off when he's on the lead. Simply put, when Phantom Currency does not get the lead, he does not run very well. So you'd have to think that Paco Lopez, who will be aboard Phantom Currency today, will be sending him. And will he be sending enough to bother Tide of the Sea? If that happens, then it certainly brings some of these closers into the fray. Number one, Temple, may be the one that's most logical. He finished second to Tide of the Sea despite chasing a slow, lonely pace, a slow, lonely lead of Tide of the Sea last time out. Temple, Irad Ortiz aboard, by far the top rider at Gulfstream Park. He's drawn well on the rail, should be able to save ground at least through the first couple turns, and maybe all he needs is a little pace pressure on his stablemate to get the job done. But it's not just about Temple and Tide of the Sea. Moon Over Miami, the Bill Mott trainee, this is a horse with a chance, and we haven't seen him since October of last year in the Belmont Derby. He has faced older horses in the past. He's beaten older horses in the past, and he's a horse that on his best day would have a big, big shot in this race. You have Aquaphobia, the other Mike Maker trainee, if you will. He did not run very well in the Pegasus Turf, his most recent start. Wasn't expected to run well that day. He was sent off at 36-1. He was only beaten four lengths, but he was really never a factor for the win. I think that he's got a better chance than that. Not 100% sure that Gulfstream is his favorite place, though. Just one win, one second-place finish from seven tries over the Gulfstream lawn. And then the real question mark of the field is number eight, Admission Office, the other Brian Lynch trainee, if you will. Admission Office ran some races both in 2019 and 2020 that are easily good enough to be there, right there, if not beat this field. And he's 5-1 on the morning line. And he was only a length behind Zulu Alpha in last year's renewal of the McDermott. And Zulu Alpha, you know, if he were in this race and in his best form, he'd be about 2-5. So Admission Office has run races that would put him right there. The problem is the races he's run recently would not put him right there. He came back at Gulfstream Park in the tropical turf going a mile, which is probably too short for him, but he really never even sniffed contention that day. Shipped up to Tampa Bay Downs for the Tampa Bay, a Grade 3 event, and came from way out of it at a mile and a 16th to finish third, only beaten a length. I think he's finally getting back to a distance that he really, really loves. He is facing much tougher competition today, but if the speed is there, if Phantom Currency and Tide of the Sea do each other in up front, Admission Office is definitely one of the ones that has a big shot from off the pace and probably at a pretty square price. Talked a little bit about the Palm Beach Stakes going as race six today. The eighth race on the card, the Grade 3 $125,000 Canadian Turf Stakes. Four-year-olds and up going a mile and a 16th on the turf. Maybe the most evenly matched stakes race of the card. I have a hard time figuring out who's actually going to be favored in this race. The morning line favorite is number two, Olympic Runner, for Mark Cassie and John Velasquez. Unfortunately, Olympic Runner was saddled with the 11-hole going the mile last time at Gulfstream, and of course the two-turn mile on the turf, the outside, not really where you want it to be. He didn't get out of the gate very well, and despite being 11 lengths back at the first call, flew home to win by a head. Now, that was against allowance competition. He's back in a stake race today, but he's run well in graded stakes in the past. Most of his graded stakes races were up at Woodbine, either on the turf or on their synthetic track, but he was running very, very well up there. In fact, he had the misfortune of running behind Pink Lloyd a couple of times last year at Woodbine, both of those sprints on there. Synthetic surface. He's probably better on the lawn and better going a little bit longer. He's going to have a big shot in here. I know Anthony loves number five, Eons, for Arno Delacour and Irad Ortiz. The fact that Irad Ortiz is aboard is one of the main reasons that Anthony really likes this horse. But Eons actually finished second in that Tampa Bay Stakes behind Got Smokin' last time out. He's riding back-to-back second-place finishes into this race, but he is already a multiple stakes winner. In fact, he won the Grade 3 Kent Stakes back as a three-year-old in July of 2019. So Eons, he has it in him. It's just a question of whether or not Irad Ortiz can find the right trip and get Eons there. I'm going to take a little bit of a shot with number seven, Monarch's Glen. Safi Joseph actually claimed this horse from Danny Gargan for $75,000 out of his last race. He's another one that's stepping up from the allowance races into the stakes races, and he's going from one good trainer to another. In fact, he's had good trainers his entire racing career. He had Bill Mott back in 2019. He's been with Danny Gargan for most of 2020 and his first start of 2021, and now he goes to Safi Joseph for this race. I think Monarch's Glen is going to have a big chance in the Grade 3 Canadian turf at a mile and a 16th. It goes as race eight. Okay, it's time for another break. We'll be back with the Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. You're listening to the Equine Forum on HRRN.
There's a corner of Kentucky in Bourbon County, which some refer to as the Promised Land. There's something in the soil and water that make it something special. So special that some of the world's greatest horsemen have staked their claim in the soil just outside of Paris. Iconic names such as Claiborne, Coolmore, Stone, and Darley grace the fence lines which have housed champions for generations. The name Alapa shines as a tribute to the Gilded Age, sharing the stature and grandeur of its neighbors. Born from the wealth passion and imagination of Edward Sims, no expense was spared to fulfill his vision. Sims was in the same league as John Madden and Arthur B. Hancock Sr. as a commercial breeder. The torch has been passed. Welcome to Hill and Dale at Alapa.
Gainesway Stallion Taprit, a $1.2 million yearling at Saratoga. Taprit's victories include the Grade 1 Belmont Stakes.
And they're into the stretch. Irish War Cry turns for home with Taprit trying to run him down in the last furlong. The two of them are now a half length apart. They are clear of Gormley and Patch. It is Irish War Cry. And on the outside, Taprit. Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish Warcry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
In his first 2 years at stud, Taprit has bred over 240 mares. Now his first weanlings have arrived, selling for up to $100,000. One of the best bred sons of Sire of Sires, Taprit, to ever enter stud. Classic winner and stakes record setter, Taprit, standing at Gainesway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Hey, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you that Race Day on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires, comes your way every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Bobby Newman joins me to bring you all of the fall and winter action from places like Aqueduct, Gulfstream, Santa Anita, Del Mar, and Churchill, as well as interviews with the biggest players in thoroughbred racing. That's Race Day on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires. Tune in on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live at horseracingradio.net.
This is Steve Asmussen. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Meanwhile, up front, La Wapa has the lead now by two. Don't Make Me Beg. Chips to the outside and runs at the leader now to be second. Along the rail, Diva Dana now racing third. Speed Sosa is now re-engaging there toward the rail fourth, and they line up four across the track. From between horses, Don't Make Me Beg strikes to the lead. And this might be win number 500 for trainer Gerald Brooks, and he gets it done today. In front, going away by two. Speed Salsa is up for second. Finishing third was La Wapa.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum. Bobby Newman and Anthony Stabile on a beautiful Saturday morning. I'm here in sunny South Florida. Anthony up in a little bit cooler New York, and you heard it there on the rejoin, the call of Richard Grunder from race four on February 20th at Tampa Bay Downs, won by Don't Make Me Beg, giving trainer Gerald Brooks his 500th career win. Gerald Brooks, our industry star of the week, presented by Stuart Morris. And Anthony Stabile had a chance to catch up with Gerald Brooks earlier and talk about his career.
Here with Jerry Brooks, this week's industry star of the week, presented by Stuart Morris, recently got win number 500. Jerry, congratulations on a great feat.
Thank you so much.
This was one that did not come without some time between drinks. Now, you were waiting for this one for quite a while.
Yeah, we were probably 5 or 6 weeks. We win two right off the beginning of the year, first day of the year, we went two back-to-back, and then we had 6 or 7 seconds in between. The next day, we went to Tampa and ran second, and then we had a few seconds between Tampa and Tollway, and just couldn't get it done, and finally it all came together.
For the folks that don't know much about you, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself? Most of the time spent up at Presque Isle in the summer. What do you do in the winter?
Yeah, I spend most every summer for the last 13 years at Presque Isle. I'm the third all-time lead trainer at Presque Isle Downs. I win most of all my races on synthetic. Since I started, I was the first year at synthetic. When they opened up Presque Isle and kind of took to that track and that surface pretty well. We just went a lot of races. I probably went 300 or so races on a synthetic. It was a change. It was a change that made me move forward. Last 10 years been very well. We've done very well. We were, last 4 years, we were second or first lead painter at Prescott. And we took a string to Turfway this year when we put the new service. We did very well. We just couldn't get enough stalls there to keep going. So we had to take some to Florida. But we're planning on hopefully next year be Prescott and Turfway. They'll give me enough stalls. But I am definitely a better trainer on a synthetic.
Don't Make Me Beg gave you win number 500 at Tampa. Talk about that feeling when she finally got it done.
Well, we had 3 seconds in a row just get beat with her. And me and Tony Lotto, we've won a lot of races together, probably 150, 160 races together. And I went to him and I said, I was there the day he won his 2000. And I said, listen, I'm going to need some help trying to get this 500. He said, well, name me on the horse. So the first time we ran her with him on, horse ran second, did the same thing she did two times prior to that, we just wouldn't go by that last horse. And he had told me, he said, well, let's try some, take him blinkers off. He said, she just won't go by the last horse. He said, well, try to put her on lead. Well, she kind of broke a little slow when it was in the middle of the pack. I said, oh, well, don't look like we're going to get it done today. And then the horse carried away way wide to the outside. He ducked her to the inside, and when he hit her in Swiss lead, she just took off, and she went on by the field. So I think with the blinkers, where she could see the other horses, made her go ahead and run, go by them. So that was pretty. So we had one in a few minutes later in Mahoning. Now we're in second. I said, well, I'm back on my second streak again. So we had a few in tonight this week at Turfway. So we're looking to win a few more this week.
Big sense of relief getting that win under your belt.
Well, you know, 500. Yeah, it's a good feeling because when I started training hot horses, you know, I was the bottom barrel guy that had cheap bad horses. I never thought I would ever imagine getting 500 wins. And then once we got on that synthetic, the wins just came every year more and more. And we got there. So it was a big, for me, because I'm not a guy that has the big money to put behind these horses. You know, most of the money is my own money. And to build it up and keep it going, you know, it takes a lot. And you got to just keep on stabbing at it.
The hard way, they call it, right? Just grinding away at the smaller tracks.
Well, yeah. So
congratulations.
The last 10 years have been very well, so...
Well, congratulations. 500, no matter how you get there, is a great feat. Here's to the next 500, and thanks for some time today.
Yep. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks to Jerry Brooks. He was our industry star of the week, presented by Stuart Morris. Had the ultimate of technical difficulties there. Thanks to Stuart Morris, as always, for presenting our industry star of the week. Stuart Morris offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation and would like to thank their owners, clients, and team. Their success is because of you. With multiple stakes horses over the past 3 years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, and South Bend, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. Visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all major sales. 500 wins, pretty nifty feat, Bobby Newman.
Yeah, and he did it the hard way. He started back in 1989 and, you know, didn't have any, you know, really, really big runners. I think his top earner was a gelding named Cooking Up a Storm, who made just over $250,000 in his racing career. It took Jerry Brooks a while, but he persevered. And, boy, he sounds happy, doesn't he? Well, I mean, what a great feat.
Yeah, just a good loving guy and a hard knocking trainer, and like you said, did it the hard way. And was able to get to 500. Not a lot of guys and gals can say that, training resources. 500 wins, a pretty amazing feat, and here's to his next 500 wins. All right, an eventful hour number one is in the books. We'll bring you hour number two in a minute. First, we're going to pause for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network. For the HRRN Racing Update. Earlier this week, the 10 finalists for the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame were announced, led by First Balloters trainer Todd Pletcher and 2015 Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup Classic winner American Pharaoh. Pletcher joins fellow trainers Doug O'Neill and Christophe Clement on the ballot, while fellow racehorses Blind Luck, Rags to Riches, Game on Dude, Harv de Gras, and Kona Gold join American Pharaoh. Jockey Corey Nakatani, the only rider, rounds out the group. Finalists need a simple majority from the voting panel when the ballots go out in March, and the results will be announced on May 5th. The Hall of Fame induction ceremonies, which will also include 2020 inductees, trainer Mark Cassie, and two-time Horse of the Year, Wise Dan, are tentatively scheduled for August 6th at the Fasig Tipton Sales Pavilion in Saratoga Springs, New York. That's this week's HRRN Racing Update. Now we're ready to bring you Hour 2 of the Equine Forum. Welcome to hour number two of the three-hour extravaganza, now known as the Equine Forum. I'm the Big A, Anthony Stabile in New York. I've changed locations in New York. Bobby Newman down in South Florida. Lee Delapina, our producer, back in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. Congratulations again to Jerry Brooks. Thanks to Shug McGahey. And thanks to Bobby Newman for stepping up there in hour number one. Lots still to come here in the next 2 hours of the Equine Forum this Saturday morning before we get kicked off here. Hey, HRR Nation, have you tried Healthnetics yet? Well, if you have a few aches and pains, sleep issues, anxiety, stress, whatever it might be, give Healthnetics premium brand CBD a try. It's all natural, THC-free, and made right here in the USA. They offer a 100% money-back guarantee. And when you place your order using promo code HRRN, you'll get 15% off plus free shipping. So visit healthnetics.com today. All right. Our next guest, I don't think he has a lot of sleep issues, any anxiety or anything. I mean, when you own champion after champion after champion, and you buy back into champion after champion after champion, things are pretty good. Sol Kumin joins us now. Sol, thanks for some time this morning. It's Bobby and Anthony here on the Equine Forum.
Hey, morning, guys. How's it going? Thanks for having me. How's everything
going? It's been a while. How's everything?
Everything's good. Everything's good. I'll tell you, I miss seeing you in Saratoga. I'm looking forward to hopefully a more normal summer this summer. Hopefully I'll be able to see a little bit more of you.
That's what I was just about to say. Usually you and I, we cross paths at Belmont once or twice. I might see you if you come out slumming to the Big A once in a while. But more often than not, we do our hanging out in Saratoga. And I didn't get to see you. I only saw Bob Edwards a couple of times this year. Mike and Libby Imperio. I mean, it was no good. No, I spent way too much money on drinks this summer. So I spent way too much of my own money on drinks this summer.
Yeah, we'll take care of that next summer. I'm looking forward to seeing a lot more of you, and the drinks will be on me.
Isn't it amazing, Sol? It's only 4.5 months away.
It's crazy. It really is crazy. It's funny. You see all these stake schedules coming out for the summer, and I stick them in my calendar just so I know kind of when things are. And I'm like, man, this is coming up soon. Mom, it's Saratoga. All these stakes are coming. So it's an exciting time of the year, starting to get everything ramped up again, which is great.
Yeah, always an exciting time when you are involved in so many fantastic champions. You know, you've had a lot of success in a fairly short amount of time in this great game of ours. Of course, Lady Eli is the first one that's always going to come to mind. Your first horse is the first one that's going to come to mind. But this filly, Monomoy Girl, while now 6-year-old mare, they don't make them more special than her.
No, this is the cliche term, a once in a lifetime horse. I mean, this is it, right? She's she gives it to you every time she comes out on the track. You know, there's always that special attachment when you buy them as a baby and name them. So many good storylines to people's careers that were changed and elevated because of her. And you know, just a special, special, special horse. And, you know, really excited for tomorrow to get her kind of back on the track and let's see where she is.
I know people have heard the story, but tell it again. I mean, like you said, you know, named her, her half-brother, Mr. Monomoy, standing here in the great state of New York now. Talk a little bit about the Monomoy name and the whole – I mean, how you got back involved after what I'd have to imagine was a big roller coaster, winning the Breeders' Cup and then seeing her, you know, head off to Spendthrift. It was a wild few days there.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy. So I guess if you start back at the beginning, you know, Liz Crowe, who had, who had kind of spun off on her own to go buy horses. We were, you know, one of her first two clients. You know, we gave her an order to buy us a bunch of fillies. This was the first ticket she signed for $100,000. Obviously the rest was history. Her career has exploded, and she's buying horses for lots of great people today. You know, you think back to, you know, your Eclipse Award winning trainer last year, Brad Cox, to think before this horse was, in his barn, he had never won a grade one race. Just seems crazy because it feels like he's winning one every other weekend. But this was his first grade one winner, and I think really helped elevate him to kind of where he is today. He obviously was always super talented, and maybe this horse helped put him on the national stage is probably a good way of putting it. And, you know, took us on an amazing, amazing ride, obviously, from winning the Kentucky Oaks to, you know, Breeders' Cup wins to dual champion to, you know, finalist for Horse of the Year a few times. I mean, just a really, really special filly. You know, part of our program is we sell everything, right? It's just kind of what we do. We need to recycle the dollars so we can try to find the next good horse. So, you know, we put her in the sale at the end of last year, and, you know, she brought a lot of money, probably more than we would have anticipated. She was bought by Spendthrift for $9.5 million, which is obviously a lot. You know, after I saw Spendthrift bought her, and learned that they were going to bring her back to race, I had a good relationship with them. Obviously we had campaigned Authentic together, last year's, Derby champion and Horse of the Year. So I asked them, look, if there's any way we had owned 50% of Monomoy Girl. And I said, look, I'd love to stay in any way, you know, whatever. I don't care. You know, 30%, 25%, 20%, whatever. Just if you're going to run her, we'd love to be involved because we've been there from the beginning and named her, et cetera. And they said that they would, you know, see what they could do. They were still trying to, they bought a bunch of horses at the sale. They were working through it. And, you know, I actually for a while didn't think it was going to happen. And in a weird way, I kind of gave up on it but obviously would have always rooted for her. And I got a call a few weeks ago that they were able to make some room for us, and we were able to get back involved this year. So we're, you know, thankful, and you know, they're just an awesome operation. I mean, they care about the game, they grow the game, they invest in it, they're great partners, and you know, they were awesome to us. So we're excited to be partnered with them, and you know, even more excited to be, you know, part of hopefully what's going to be a great ride this year and start on Sunday.
Hey, Sal, this is Bobby Newman. A couple of questions. First of all, do you know, has Monomoy Girl been introduced to Into Mischief yet? Because it seems like at some point they're going to get to know each other pretty intimately.
Yeah, my guess is they will too. I think, you know, Spendthrift, you know, they'll decide what they want to do afterwards and you know, they'll make the decision. And my guess is that is that they will become pretty well acquainted. But again, that's above my pay grade. I'm not sure exactly.
On a more serious note, so Monomoy Girl, you mentioned that she was purchased for $9.5 million by Spendthrift and then the decision to run her again this year. There's obviously a plan of attack for the year because, you know, when you're spending that much money on a mare, it's not just simply to come back to the Byakoa and that's it. What are the hopeful plans if everything goes perfectly for Monomoy Girl? What's the plan of attack for 2021?
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll take it one race at a time. I mean, you know, it's obviously going to be, you know, Spendthrift and my racehorse, and you know, those guys are going to make the call. They own much more of the horse than we do. So we're, you know, we went from being the majority owner to a minority owner, and You know, we know well how to play that role, and we're just going to enjoy ourselves and let them make all the big decisions. I mean, I think the most important thing, or the biggest thing I can tell you, is it doesn't seem like there's a huge pressure right away to take on the boys. And I think if that was going to happen, you would have already seen her, you know, running the Pegasus or Saudi or something like that. And they don't seem to be going in that direction, right? I mean, I think the two-race plan would be the race on Sunday and then the Apple Blossom, and then take a deep breath and kind of figure it out from there. And I think they'd like to obviously see her be champion and win a Breeders' Cup race again. So that's pretty much what I know. Obviously, things can change depending on how she's doing. And again, you know, they're obviously going to make the decision, and we're going to just be along for the ride, which will be great.
We're talking with Saul Kuhlman, part owner of Monomoy Girl. From the beginning, you know, you talked about the churning the money, if you will. You're at the races all the time. You bring your family out all the time. It's got to be tough, right? It's got to be tough saying goodbye to Lady Eli, saying goodbye to Monomoy Girl. But like you said, it's you know, it's a business, and you got to try and take some of that money off the table sometime. And in a game where you often see a lot of mistakes made without the money being taken off the table, where, you know, guys and gals pass up on big money. You know, you got to treat it as business, but still, it's got to be hard to say goodbye, especially to the Phillies, right?
It's so hard. It's so hard. And some years are harder than others, right? I mean, we think about last year, we sold British Idiom privately, who was a champion. We sold Uni at the sale, who was a champion. We sold Midnight Bisou at the sale, who was a champion. And then obviously Monomoy Girl, and it was crushing. And honestly, the harder part, I'm sort of used to it by now. You know, you hope they go to good places. Most of the time they do. You can visit them. And obviously that, you know, you hope they're successful in the next part of their career. Sometimes it's harder on my kids because they get attached to certain horses, and you get the question from your 9-year-old, Dad, why can't we just keep her and raise her babies? And you know, it's a harder one, but you know, it's just part of the program. You got to do it. And it honestly, it's harder for me when they come back and race than when they're going to be moms. When they're going to be moms, I'm sort of mentally okay with it. I know that we were, you know, we did our job, you know, as owners for the racing part, and tried to, you know, put them in good places, take care of them, give, you know, be patient with them, do all the right stuff. And then, you know, you sort of pass them on to the, you know, the professionals who this is what they do for a living. But, you know, they know how to breed and take care of their mares. And that's just not our business, you know. So it's those are less hard than the ones where, you know, if I had to watch Monomoy Girl race this year and was not involved in her, that would be a much more difficult situation for me to handle.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense, actually. You know, you're again, you love being at the track, see you all the time, family out there. The COVID hits last year, and we've talked to a lot of trainers and a lot of jockeys about this. I haven't really talked to any owners about this. For someone like you, who is almost strictly just involved in the racing portion of it, did it affect your... game plan's the wrong word. Your mindset, like, hey, if I can't be at the races, do I really want to do this? Or was the passion still there for this?
Yeah, it's a good question. For me, the passion is still there. I think, you know, I have our stable, there's four of us that own the horses together. I'd say, you know, a couple of my partners follow it much less closely than I do, and they really do it because they like to come on the big days. So I would say if COVID had gone on for 3 years and we couldn't go to any big races for 3 years, I think it would have affected their, you know, willingness to be involved a little bit more. I think for 1 year, because everyone was in such a crazy spot mentally, that, you know, in a weird way, the fact that we couldn't be there was okay because we were able to watch the races on TV and it gave us something to do. So the short answer is, for a year it was okay. If it had been longer, it probably would have had a bigger effect on us. I mean, the reality is, you know, we don't get to go that often. I mean, we're, you know, for me, I've got, you know, whatever, 9, 11, and 12-year-old kids that are playing sports and a job and all kinds of stuff going on. So it's all about Saratoga. I mean, if I step foot in a track 25 days a year, 20 of them are going to be at Saratoga, and then I'll slide into the, you know, the Breeders' Cup and a couple other big days, and that's pretty much it. So, you know,
I need Saratoga. I look forward to it all year. It's my favorite place on earth. The mornings there, I mean, really nothing makes me happier. I mean, I'm like dream about being in my golf cart with my kids, going from barn to barn and feeding the horses peppermints and watching turf works. And I mean, that's my happy place. So hopefully we'll be back there this summer. That's what I miss the most by a long shot. You know, hopefully we'll be back there soon.
Well, opening week, you make sure you swing by Section B. Come on up to the. I'll have a set of headphones sterilized waiting for you. You can come on up. I got my Clorox wipes. Cheap plug for Clorox. I got my Clorox wipes. You come on up. We'll chew the fat a little bit. I like Splendor in my iced coffee, and we'll be good to go.
I'm drinking mine right now. I'll bring you a Dunkin' iced coffee. I've already got mine right now. I'll bring one for you, too.
Saul, thanks for some time today. Good luck with the big man tomorrow. And down the road, I'm sure we'll talk to you soon.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, guys. Have a great day. Thanks for having me on. Take care of yourself.
You got it, buddy. You too.
Saul. Thanks, Saul.
And like all of our guests, Saul will receive some apparel from Embrace the Race for the racing fan in your life or for yourself. Embrace your passion over at EmbraceTheRace.com. Yeah, that guy loves Saratoga. He loves the game. I was happy for him because I knew just how much Monomoy Girl meant to him and his family. That he was able to get back in. You know, it's at that point where, you know, the money's not important in an instance like this. This was one of the cornerstones of, you know, of a guy who has put up a lot of money into this game. And I was glad that he was able to get back into that partnership group.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, he's been so successful as an owner. I wonder if he starts getting more and more people in his ear, either wanting to be part of an ownership group with him or maybe trying to get him to look at horses to buy, knowing that, you know, he's a guy who may listen.
Yeah, he likes action. He loves his action. That's part of the reason he's not really involved in the breeding aspect of things. He likes to watch them out on the track and, you know, watch them perform, which is, I think it's out in a day and age where the breeding side of the game, you know, is probably more important than ever for a guy or a gal to just love the action on the track like he does. I think it's an attribute and it's certainly a big boost. For the great sport of kings. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, our very own Kurt Becker is going to take a stroll through racing history. We'll do it with him when we return. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Cairo Prince is the leading third crop sire by number of stakes winners, stakes horses, graded stakes winners, and graded stakes horses. He's also a top five general sire by the number of two-year-old winners so far in 2020. And his current crop of yearlings is his first conceived at a $25,000 stud fee. Yearlings from Cairo Prince's fourth crop sold for up to $400,000 this year, underlining his incredible commercial appeal. At $15,000 stands and nurses for 2021, Cairo Prince's value in the extreme, standing at Airdrie Stud. Think about it.
Broken Vow, a top 15 lifetime active sire with over 170 black type horses, 90 black type winners, and approaching $80 million in progeny earnings. In 2020, Broken Vow produced Saratoga Springs winner Stan the Man and the Speedy M. Primus, winner of the $700,000 turf sprint. Juvenile stakes horses include The Grass is Blue and Chasing Kara. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Championship Meet is on at Gulfstream Park with world-class racing Wednesday through Sunday, now through March 28th. Thoroughbred Stakes action continues with the Grade 1 Florida Derby on March 27th and much, much more. Stay in the action from your mobile phone with the First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. First Bet offers predicted picks, high-definition live stream races, replays, and live betting from the palm of your hand. Visit GulfstreamPark.com for more information. That's GulfstreamPark.com.
This is Elliot Walden, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
The speed backing up now. Arthur L. can fight with nothing left. And there goes Pulpit, sweeping past Confide. And he will take aim at Arthur L. On the inside, Acceptable is coming on through with his run. And farther back, Wrightwood and Captain Bodgett passing horses on the extreme outside. Blazing Sword is also in with a chance. They're coming down to the final furlong. And Pulpit is roused to the lead. Pulpit takes the lead and opens up a length. Blazing!
The one and only Tom Durkin on the call. It was all pulpit back in, 1997. Boy, does that make me feel old. A young Tom Durkin on that call of the Fountain of Youth. Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on HRRN. The Big A and Bobby Newman, the race day boys, taking over your Saturday morning here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, sitting in for the Baron, Mike Penna. We're going to be kind of joined now by our man Kurt Becker, our very own, because it's time now to join Kurt for this week's Stroll Through Racing History, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. He was champion juvenile in 1987, but the critics said he would have distance limitations as a three-year-old. They said he was bred to be a sprinter. They said he lacked the heart to win a close race. But by the end of his three-year-old campaign, 49er had won four photo finish decisions, including a thriller in the Traverse Stakes at a mile and a quarter. Bred and owned by Claiborne Farm, 49er was a son of the legendary Claiborne stallion Mr. Prospector. Trained by Hall of Famer Woody Stevens and described as a young colt in the hands of an old master, 49er won 5 of 6 starts as a two-year-old, including Grade 1 wins in the Futurity and the Champagne at Belmont Park. The result was an Eclipse Award as champion juvenile and status as the Winter Book favorite for the Kentucky Derby. As a three-year-old in 1988, 49er's first win of the season came in the Fountain of Youth at Gulfstream Park, a race he won by a nose over Notebook as the odds-on favorite. But in the Florida Derby a few weeks later, 49er lost by a neck to 32-1 long shot Brian's Time. The fact he had given up the lead in the final 20 yards led the critics to suggest that the stretch out to a mile and an eighth had been the problem. On April 16, 49er went to the post for the Lexington Stakes at Keeneland as the heavy favorite before a crowd of 28,000. The result? Another loss, this time by a head to Risen Star. Despite the questions which surrounded him, 49er still had enough respect from the betting public to be dispatched as the third betting choice in a field of 17 horses for the 114th running of the Kentucky Derby. Coming down the stretch, he looked like the best colt in North America. The only thing standing between him and the roses was a filly. It was Winning Colors who made history that day, becoming just the third filly ever to win the Kentucky Derby. 49er had run a brilliant race down the stretch, but was a neck short at the wire. Following a 7th-place finish 2 weeks later in the Preakness, 49er's name dropped from the radar as Risen Star dazzled racing fans by capturing not only the Preakness Stakes, but also the Belmont, the latter by 14 lengths. As the summer campaign began, the conventional wisdom was that 49er had reached his limits, and the limits seemed to be twofold. He could not win at a classic distance, and he was less than dependable in a photo finish. But the summer campaign would prove to be 49er's redemption. On July 30, 1988, 49er stepped into the starting gate at Monmouth Park before a crowd of 23,000 as the 4-5 favorite in the Grade 1 Haskell Invitational. Following a battle with Seeking the Gold, which lasted the length of the home stretch, 49er prevailed by a nose under Lafitte Penkai Jr. 3 weeks later, on August 20 in the Grade 1 Traverse Stakes at Saratoga, 49er would once again find himself in a showdown with Seeking the Gold. This time, the distance would be a mile and a quarter, and the jockey would be Chris McCarron, subbing for an injured Penkai. The crowd would be twice as large, and the final furlong would once again produce a furious battle. Marshall Cassidy gives us the call.
They're at the 8th pole. 49er leads clearly by 2. Seeking the Gold moves into second on the outside. Brian's Time. Brian's Time. Seeking the Gold. Gaining ground on the outside of 49er. Hoops straight past 16th pole. Hits Seeking the Gold and 49er to the wire. Seeking the Gold on 49er. 49er on the inside.
For the second time in 3 weeks, 49er had beaten Seeking the Gold by a nose. And this time he had done it at the classic distance of a mile and a quarter. 49er had proved his critics wrong. The year would conclude with a runner-up finish to Ali Sheba in the Woodward at Belmont Park, a win in the inaugural edition of the New York Racing Association Mile at Aqueduct, and a 4th-place finish in the Breeders' Cup Classic at Churchill Downs. 49er finished his career with 11 wins and 5 seconds from 19 starts and $2.7 million in earnings. He enjoyed a successful stallion career in both the U.S. and Japan. with his offspring including leading sire Distorted Humor, Travers winner Coronado's Quest, and Belmont winner Editor's Note. He would also become the grandsire of Kentucky Derby and Preakness winner Funny Side, and the great-grandsire of Dual Classic winner I'll Have Another. 49er died in May of 2020 in Japan at the age of 35. Please join me again next week when I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
I'll look back at one of the horses that, when I certainly think back of the 80s, and so especially those late 80s, Bobby, 49er was tough as nails.
Yeah, you and I did a segment all last week on race day about who some of the most underrated horses of our lifetime were, and I don't think we got a vote for 49er, but he may be one of them. He won 11 of his 19 career starts, made $2.7 million in his career. He was an iron horse too. Not only did he run in the Florida Derby, he then ran in the Lafayette on April 8th and then the Lexington on April 16th before going in the Kentucky Derby on the first Saturday in May. I think what 49er may be most remembered for, at least in my eyes, is the fact that he was kind of used as a pawn by Pat Day in the Preakness, where it seemed like the only intent Pat Day had that day was to bother winning colors and to try to get her beat, and unfortunately sacrificed the best chances of 49er winning the Preakness, but came back off a couple month rest. You heard it there. Won an allowance at Monmouth, won the Haskell, won the Travers. What a phenomenal stretch call, by the way, by Marshall Cassidy there in the Travers. He sounded like an auctioneer coming down the stretch, was seeking the gold. Brian's Time and 49er all fighting it out, and really, really good horse. And of course, an answer to a trivia question, one of only a few Claiborne horses with two words in their name.
Yeah. We were only able to come up with Round Table, and the rest of it was all single name. You know, it's funny. I think a lot of fans and a lot of people, not only in the sport, but I think it's human nature, that you're always going to remember the most interesting thing about a horse, right? Maybe you're not going to remember their greatest race. Maybe you're not going to remember their race record. But I will always remember 49er. And I am sitting high atop the finish line at the Big A right now. I'm Aqueduct. I had to move my tack to Aqueduct. The inaugural Naira Mile, you heard Kurt talk about it, which is now the Cigar Mile, was won by 49er. And you would say, oh, that's a neat little tidbit. But the most interesting thing about that tidbit is that was in the midst of a jockey strike here in New York. And Billy Fox Jr. will forever be the most interesting tidbit for me as far as 49er's career. Who rode 49er to win the inaugural Naira / Cigar Mile? And the answer to that question is Billy Fox Jr. because of that. And I think, you know, it almost takes away for me what he did from his career, because that's the thing I'll always remember. So, yeah, as you know, Hickory as far as being a racehorse, but unfortunately, that's the thing I'll remember the most about 49er.
Do we know why 49er did not run in the Breeders' Cup in 1987? I know he had reeled off four straight stakes wins as a two-year-old, the Sanford, the Futurity, the Champagne, and the Breeders' Futurity, but then we didn't see him again until the Hutchison at Gulfstream Park.
Yeah, I don't know that question. You know, I thought about that. But, you know, Woody wasn't – maybe Woody didn't want to ship him. That's the only thing I could think. And, you know, with the Breeders' Cup having only been 87, so he's talking 4 years old, right?
It was at Hollywood Park.
It was Hollywood Park. Not won a ship. Those four, I don't have his PPs in front of me. My assumption is he hadn't been two turns yet. You know, that was back at a time where a lot of these two-year-olds, especially the East Coast two-year-olds, didn't see two turns until their two-year-old year, and sometimes they didn't see two turns until 2 or 3 weeks before the Kentucky Derby, right? The Hutchison, Rangers Like the Hutch and the Swale down in Florida would lead you to the Gotham up here in New York. And then 2 weeks before the Derby, you'd run in the Wood Memorial, and that would be a 9-furlong race. You'd go to two turns, and that would really be the first time for a lot of these horses that they saw two turns. So maybe that was it. Maybe it was a combination of the ship all the way out west and the two turns. But that's a great question. I don't know.
I'm gonna stop you there because it was a one turn mile at Hollywood Park that year.
And oh, interesting.
It was won by Success Express, who was accomplished, but not nearly as accomplished as 49er. In fact, he ran behind 49er in the hopeful. Earlier that year, Success Express had won races like the Canterbury Juvenile and the Sport of King's Futurity at Louisiana Downs. And he was beaten in the Norfolk Stakes, but went over to Hollywood Park and wins the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Obviously, if 49er would have been in that race, he would have been solidly favored.
Yeah. I don't know. I always forget about that mile shoot because by the time I was really tuned into California racing, they didn't run mile races out of that chute anymore. They ran 7.5. Was it the On Trust that they ran every year in November?
Yeah, the On Trust handicap. And they used to have two finish lines at Hollywood Park. They'd have an extended one for the mile, or they'd have a shorter one that they'd run 7.5 furlongs out of that chute. But that Breeders' Cup in 1987 was the one-turn mile, was Success Express for Wayne Lucas. And 49er, I cannot remember. We're going to have to call Kurt Becker and find out what exactly happened, why 49er skipped that race and waited for Gulfstream.
If anybody would know, it would be him. Guy's a walking encyclopedia.
Yeah, between Kurt Becker and John and our friend, the Morning Line Maker, out at Santa Anita, we could find out about anything that's happened in the last 50 years.
John White, yeah. And that's why I played the pulpit Fountain of Youth. Figure we had to honor the Claiborne Orange. And there you go, one word, preach, pulpit. We got to get him a two-namer. They're gonna run out of word word names at some point, aren't they?
I would guess that Walker Hancock and his team probably have a list stored in a safe somewhere of possible names to use for Colts and or Phillies down the line. So they probably have 20 years worth of names they can get through before they're worried about suggestions from us.
You know, that could be a poll question for race day. Your favorite Claiborne name? I have my answer, by the way. Pilfer. Do you remember Pilfer was not memorable, but Pilfer was my favorite. Pilfer was my favorite. Speaking of the Fountain of Youth and polls, the Equine Forum poll question of the day presented by Owner View and the Thoroughbred Owner Conference. We asked you earlier today, which Kentucky Derby prep are you looking most forward to today? Nice little battle here right now. Fountain of Youth, 53.7%. To the southwest at 46.3%. Dave Kaiser checking in. Essential Quality Jackie's Warrior rematch. I'm with you, Dave. I'm looking forward to seeing Greatest Honor, but I'm really looking forward to seeing the matchup today for a couple of reasons. One, I want to see if Jackie's Warrior can handle the two turns. And two, and that's the fan in me. And the professional in me, the gambler in me, is hoping I can eke out 9-5. If I get 9-5 on Jackie's Warrior today, it could be a rubber band off kind of situation.
So that may be another question for you. If you could get 2-1 on Jackie's Warrior or 8-5 on Greatest Honor,
Eight to five on Greatest Honor. 8-5 on Greatest Honor, please. Because there's no essential quality to in that. There's not an essential quality in the Fountain of Youth. I don't have to worry about any of them. I don't think I have to worry about any of them with Greatest Honor.
By the way, speaking of the Southwest Stakes and the races at Oaklawn today, I know you called the races at Aqueduct the last couple of days, and you're calling this weekend. I don't know if you had a chance to see, but some rainy weather came in to Hot Springs yesterday, and it was pretty sloppy there for most of the day. And the rain is supposed to continue this afternoon, tonight, and tomorrow. So there's a good chance that Essential Quality, Jackie's Warrior, the horses in the Razorback, even Monomoy Girl in the Bay of Coa Sunday may have to adapt to sloppy tracks if they want to get the win.
Yeah. And we'll see just how much rain they get today. Certainly looks like a lot more tonight, and we'll see how all the stars and maybe some of the upsetters handle the wet track. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. You know what? We're going to find out about if there's an essential quality to the Jackie's Warrior in the Southwest. Who'll play that role for greatest honor? Could it be Fire at Will? First, we're going to call all the three-year-olds with my man Bobby Newman. And then we're going to talk to trainer Mike Maker, who sends out Fire at Will and a host of others on that 9 stakes card down at Gulfstream today. Remember, it's First Post at Gulfstream, 11:30, First Post here at the Big A, 105. Those are two program and post time changes. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Justify, a 4-time Grade 1 winner, Eclipse Champion 3-year-old, Horse of the Year, and the only undefeated Triple Crown winner. By Sire of Sires, Scat Daddy, Justify's first foals sold for up to $600,000 at the recent November sales, while his in-foal mares were led by the 3-time Grade 1 winning daughter of Uncle Mo, Bast, who sold for $4.2 million to Spendthrift Farm. Justify has covered over 80 Grade 1 winners or dams of Grade 1 winners in his first 2 years at Ashford. Call the team at Ashford today to book your mare while there are still seasons available.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
Oscar Performance, the pinnacle of success as a precocious juvenile and again at 3.
Oscar Performance, bravo! He wins the juvenile turf.
Oscar Performance has won the Secretary of State's.
Oscar Performance goes all the way in the Belmont Derby Invitational.
And the pinnacle of success at 4, equaling the world record for a mile in the Grade 3 poker and dominating the competition in the Grade 1 Woodbine Mile.
But it's Oscar Performance shrugs them off. A gate-to-wire winner.
Oscar Performance, standing at Millridge.
Hello, this is Steve Cawthon, winner of the Triple Crown 1978 Aboard Affirmed, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They're midway on the final turn. And back up front, Out of Door continues to lead. Gretzky the Great. Out of Door leads at a length and a half. Gretzky the Great second. Abiko third to the outside. Fire at Will is in fourth. Cadillac is fifth. Mutaza back and Seal Away still far back, nearly 10 from the front. Out of Door two-length lead. Fire at Will moves up on the outside. Gretzky the Great is in third. Cadillac fourth. Battleground is fifth on the outside. Fire at Will puts ahead in front from Out of Door. In second, Battleground, then Cadillac to the inside. Fire at Will to the front and drawing clear for Ricardo Santana Jr. in the juvenile turf.
More Kurt Becker. Guy should be sitting in the studio with us. He was on the call at the Breeders' Cup, of course, at his home track, Keeneland. Fire at Will got the job done in the Breeders' Cup juvenile turf. He's going to try the main track again today. He's 1-for-1 on the dirt. He'll do it today again in that Fasig Tipton Fountain of Youth. Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on HRR. And before we call Mike Maker, we're going to be calling all three-year-olds presented by Spendthrift Farm.
They're all in line. And they're off.
Spendthrift Farm presents Calling All Three-Year-Olds with Bobby Newman.
The first Kentucky Derby points qualifying race in 2021 outside the United States took place last weekend. It was the Hyacinth Stakes at Tokyo Racecourse, worth 30 points to the winner. As it turned out, La Perouse was the only Triple Crown nominee in the full field, and he closed from far back under Christophe Lemaire to win by almost two lengths, covering the mile in 1:36.4. Back stateside, there are two fantastic stakes on the Derby trail today. We start at Oaklawn Park for the long-awaited return of champion two-year-old Essential Quality in the Grade 3 Southwest Stakes, worth 10 Derby points to the winner. He was last seen capturing the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, capping off an undefeated two-year-old season and stamping himself as the winner book favorite for the Derby. The Brad Cox trainee has been working steadily at Fairgrounds and should be tough to beat once again. But he'll have to pass familiar foe Jackie's Warrior if he wants to win again. The latter disappointed as the heavy favorite in the Breeders' Cup, but that was his first start around two turns, and he was pressing a fast pace. He may have the lead all to himself in the Southwest, which certainly could make things tougher for the champ. Gulfstream Park hosts the Grade 2 Fountain of Youth today. 50 Derby points go to the victor, virtually guaranteeing a spot in the starting gate on the first Saturday in May. The field of 10 is headed by Greatest Honor, who was last seen crushing the field in the Grade 3 Holy Bull. He'll once again take on Tarantino and Prime Factor, who finished second and third to him respectively that day. New shooters include upset winner of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, Fire at Will, as well as talented sprinter Drain the Clock. Expect the pace to be fast. I'll be back with this week's top five list right after this word from Spendthrift.
Vino Rosso, the most accomplished racehorse by leading sire Curlin. An undefeated two-year-old and major Kentucky Derby prep race winner as a three-year-old, multiple Grade 1 winner Vino Rosso won the Eclipse Award for Older Dirt Male at 4 after a dominant victory in the 2019 Breeders' Cup Classic, just like his sire Curlin a dozen years prior.
And it's a vintage performance by Vino Rosso!
His negative 6 1/4 thoroughbred number marks the fastest in the history of the Breeders' Cup Classic. Champion Vino Rosso, standing at Spendthrift Farm.
This week's top five list of Derby contenders looks like this. Number one, Essential Quality, undefeated, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Champion, runs in the Grade 3 Southwest at Oaklawn today. Number two, Life is Good, undefeated son of Into Mischief. We should see him March 6th at Santa Anita in the Grade 2 San Felipe. Numbers three and four, Caddo River and Concert Tour, both coming into the Grade 2 Rebel at Oaklawn on March 13th in great form. And number five, Mandaloon, another son of Into Mischief, impressive winner of the Risen Star last time out. The March 20th Louisiana Derby at Fairgrounds looks like his next stop. That's your Calling All Three-Year-Old segment presented by Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm.
All right, Essential Quality, number one on Calling All Three-Year-Olds top five. We'll see him in action later on today. But earlier on the Saturday afternoon, well, into the evening, as Shug said earlier, 6:10 Eastern time at Gulfstream Park. The finale on the 14-race Saturday card is that Fasig-Tipton Fountain of Youth, Grade 2. Couple of horses that Shug faced last time with Greatest Honor, Tarantino, Prime Factor back. A new shooter, a new face is Fire at Will, and his trainer, Mike Makers, here now. The Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf winner going to go back to the dirt. Mike, it's Anthony and Bobby here on the Equine Forum. Thanks for some time on a very busy Saturday for you.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with Fire at Will. We got a few horses to talk about. Let's start with Fire at Will. You know, a lot of times you'll see the turf two-year-olds that turn three, their trainers, their owners will think about giving them a start on the main track. Of course, everybody gets Derby fever. The difference here is you already have a race on the main track with Fire at Will. Did that play a big role into the decision to try him in the Fountain of Youth for his first start back this year?
A little bit. You know, his win was in the slop and off the turf event. So, you know, although it was a nice race, it still doesn't tell us if he likes the dirt or not, I don't think. But, you know, having said that, there's not a whole lot of three-year-old turf races with any significance out there at this time of year. We have more to gain to experiment right now than we would later in the year.
Kendrick Carmouche, who rode him to win the Grade 2 Pilgrim, his first turf win before that Breeders' Cup upset at 30-1. Kendrick's going to be reunited with him today. you both had, you know, you've won an awful lot of races in your career, as had Kendrick. But last year was a little bit of a breakout season, I think. A lot of people view it that way for both of you guys. Happy to have him back aboard for this horse's return to the dirt.
Yes, Kendrick looks like he's having a fabulous winter in New York, and always happy to have him.
Yeah, he did a great job getting this horse home in the Pilgrim two starts back.
Mike, this is Bobby Newman. Fire at Will has been so versatile thus far in his career. He won from way out of it, his one try on the main track at Saratoga on the sloppy track. He went wire to wire in the Pilgrim. He won from just off the pace in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. Have you looked at the pace scenario for the Fountain of Youth? Where would you like Fire at Will to be laying early on?
I anticipate he'll be in a stalking position. I don't, you know, he's a pretty laid back professional horse where you can just put him wherever you need him in the race.
He returned to the work tab the middle of January. Can you kind of take us through after the Breeders' Cup 2 when you got him back? Was he on a farm? Did he just get a month off or so? And he seems to be training real nice. You got that 6 furlong breeze in him, a little bit of a stamina building move. Talk about his the time since we've last seen him back on November 6th.
Yeah, he's filled out, carrying a lot more flesh than he did as a 2-year-old. And, you know, like I said, since day one, he's always been professional, easy ride, nothing too fancy with him. So, same old Fire Will, but he looks wonderful and trains are wonderful.
Mike, is it simple with Fire at Will as deciding, you know, if he runs well today, you keep him on the Derby trail, and if he doesn't run one of his better races today, it's right back to the turf?
That's correct.
So this is something he's going to have to earn his way moving forward. Is that fair to say?
Yes, it is.
All right. So Fire at Will going to try and take on Greatest Honor and stay and earn his way, if you will, onto the Derby Trail. You have a bunch of horses in at Gulfstream. Let's just kind of rapid fire through them. McDermott, three of the 8 horses in here. By the morning line favorite, Tide of the Sea. A little bit of a different pace scenario from the McKnight when you ran 1-2 with him and Temple. You also have Aquaphobia, who won a grade one for you last year in the United Nations at Monmouth. You got a nice little hold on this grade two today. Temple's a horse Bobby and I both like this afternoon. Maybe a little bit of a more favorable pace scenario for him today?
You know, Tide of the Sea has taken on Phantom Currency before, and Phantom Currency wasn't able to keep up, you know, the addition of Paco or how aggressive they're going to be out of the gate, but we're just going to let Tide of the Sea run his race, whether they send him or whatever, and if not, we got, I think the horse will be laying third and fourth in the race, see what happens.
Yeah, Temple and Aquaphobia, both... Aquaphobia, of course, a grade one winner. Later on in the card, race 6, the Palm Beach. Chess's Dream posted a pretty big upset in that Kitten's Joy last time out. Man, talk about a horse who hasn't done much wrong on the turf. A couple of narrow defeats, a couple of daylight scores, and not as cozy a draw as last time, but you have one of the leading riders. You're one of the first guys, especially down in South Florida. You have horses down in South Florida year-round. You're one of the first guys to really kind of latch on to and support Tyler Gaffalione, and to see the rider he's become and to team up on some of the big horses now must be rewarding for you.
It sure is. He's such a great kid and a good rider, you know, very deserving of all the success that he's had, and only going to get better.
Yeah, this horse ran really well in the Kitten's Joy, and it seems like he has a little pace on here again with the rail runner Hot-Blooded and Fighting Force from Todd.
Yeah, I'd like to see that strong pace up front, and hopefully we can tuck in and get another rail trip.
Mike, you've also got a couple of runners in the Canadian Turf Stakes. Goes as the eighth race on the card. Different type of runners. Fancy Looker, already a Grade 2 winner, winning the American Turf in 2020. And then Dyna Drive, who you just claimed two starts ago for $50,000, October at Belmont Park. Couple of longer prices who figured to come from off the pace. How are they coming into the race?
They're coming in a wonderful you know, Dyna Drive was a reclaim on our behalf, and you know, he ran a super race last time, so I expect another late run today. And then Fancy Liquor, I think we'll try to get him more involved in the race early than you know, he won Churchill coming from off the pace, but the pace was so hot that day I think it collapsed in front of him, but I think he does best run on or near the lead.
You mentioned, Mike, Dyna Drive was a reclaim for the ownership team of Paradise Farms Corporation and David Stoddicker. Is this a situation, or when you have reclaims like this, is this something where you go to the owners and suggest that you claim the horse back, or did they come to you and say, hey, we want to get this horse back?
We have such a good relationship. It goes both ways.
Yeah, you're so successful at that claim box, turning these claiming horses. A reclamation project is the word you hear a lot of that. But again, like I said last year, 270 wins last year. You ever sit back and just, I mean, the only word is to, you ever sit back and just marvel at that?
Actually, you know, at the end of the year, we're just like, man, where did this year go? And with the shortened year, you know, not that we're complaining, but the, you know, we're very fortunate and blessed to have the year that we did. Hopefully we continue to build on it.
Yeah, that's five a week. That's essentially one a racing day. Well, you have horses all over the world, so you're running almost every day. Last button on Murphy's Coke. Not much to Jakarta, right? Honey Fox, you're just going to go to the lead, I would assume?
Looked like it didn't seem like a whole lot of pace to me on paper, and that's, you know, stretching out. Obviously, she's going to be in the lead, and hopefully we're on the lead, and we got to hold off Get Stormy.
All right. Not an easy task, but best of luck trying to hold off the big mare. And best of luck with Fire. Well, you know, I think it's always good to see people trying different things, especially with, you know, this time of year. Because, you know, a lot of people get accused of Derby fever, but I don't think, and maybe he's not as good on dirt as he is on turf, but I think it's hard to imagine that there's anybody, you know, Greatest Honor and Fire at Will just look like really talented horses. I mean, obviously the horse is talented. He's a Breeders' Cup winner. I hope it works out for you today. I hope this horse runs well for you today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, Mike, thanks for some time this morning. Go get loose. You got about a dozen to saddle this afternoon.
Thank you.
All right. Trainer Mike Maker, like all of our guests, will receive some apparel from Embrace the Race. For yourself or the racing fan in your life, embrace your passion over at embracetherace.com. I always like to watch when a guy or gal has multiple runners in a race, just to see how they get to their saddling, because a lot of trainers always want to take at least a look. They got assistants there and help to, you know, cinch the saddle, but they always want to take at least a little bit of a look, you know.
Yeah, and when it comes to races like that, McDermott, I mean, he's just got him surrounded in that race. He may have the best speed horse in the race. He may have the best stalker in the race. He might have the best closer in the race in horses like Tide of the Sea, Temple, and Aquaphobia. I disagree. I happen to think that Phantom Currency will bother Tide of the Sea at least a little bit in the race, because I don't think Phantom Currency has any chance at all winning if he doesn't go to the lead. And whether he has to go out of his comfort zone or not to bother Tide of the Sea, I think they're both going to try for the lead, and it really could play right into the hands of Temple and of Aquaphobia, among a couple others in that race.
Yeah, I agree with you. I would imagine there'd be a little pace on in there. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, more equine form to come your way. Sean Clancy is going to go in the room with a special guest in just a little bit. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
There's a corner of Kentucky in Bourbon County, which some refer to as the Promised Land. There's something in the soil and water that make it something special. So special that some of the world's greatest horsemen have staked their claim in the soil just outside of Paris. Iconic names such as Claiborne, Coolmore, Stone, and Darley grace the fence lines which have housed champions for generations. The name Alapa shines as a tribute to the Gilded Age, sharing the stature and grandeur of its neighbors. Born from the wealth, passion, and imagination of Edward Sims, no expense was spared to fulfill his vision. Sims was in the same league as John Madden and Arthur B. Hancock Sr. as a commercial breeder. The torch has been passed. Welcome to Hill and Dale at Alapa.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
70 organizations, 160 facilities, 7,800 horses, one accreditation. The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance is the only accrediting body in thoroughbred aftercare and is supported by all aspects of the thoroughbred industry. To learn more or to support the TAA, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Okay, kids, Dad's gonna teach you how to dance. First, spread your feet apart. Then, pump your knee, nod your head, shake your hips, and bite your lip ever so slightly. Now, with one hand in the air, point at people with the other hand. I call that the rock star.
Dance like a dad. It's a great way to make a moment with your kids.
Now, make a face like it just smells something bad.
Visit fatherhood.gov, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Get in-depth handicapping advice on the Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Betts. Every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman look forward to all of the weekend's biggest stakes races and break down each one with expert analysis. Get a jump on the competition with the Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Betts. Fridays at 6 on Sirius 219, XM 201, or streaming at horseracingradio.com.
Hi, I'm Leah Jarmati, and I love listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back. The Big A. That's me, Bobby Newman. That's him. We're filling in for the Baron, Mike Penna, here on this final February edition of the Equine Forum. Hey, HRR Nation, have you tried Healthnetics yet? I've been wondering that all morning long. Well, if you have a few aches and pains, sleep issues, anxiety, stress, whatever it might be, give Healthnetics premium brand CBD a try. It's all natural, THC-free, and made right here in the USA. They offer a 100% money-back guarantee as well, and when you place your order using promo code HRRN, you'll get 15% off plus free shipping. So visit healthnetics.com today. Fun first couple of hours here on this equine forum. This is our first one together, Bobby. It's been fun so far. Good job so far.
Yeah, enjoying it and really enjoying this new 3-hour format. It's fantastic.
So, like Bobby said, 3-hour format, 2 down, 1 to go. That's going to do it for the first 2 hours of the Equine Forum, but there is plenty more to come here this morning as we continue all the way up to 11 a.m. Eastern. We'll kick off the third hour of the show with this week's edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy, a special one-on-one conversation with jockey Florent Giroux. Plus, you'll hear from Gulfstream Park track announcer Pete Aiello and Hall of Fame trainer Steve Asmussen. If your local station is leaving us at this time, you can continue listening to the third hour of the show nationwide on Sirius 219, XM 201, in the Louisville, Kentucky market on ESPN 680, or on your computer, phone, or tablet with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net. Hour 3 of the Equine Forum is next, right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It is California Chrome in front, and from the back of the pack on the outside, Commanding Curve is taken second, but California Chrome shines bright in the Kentucky Derby!
Into the final furlong, there will be a fourth jewel in the crown. He's an everlasting credit to the sport. American Pharoah has belted a Grand Slam in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Gunrunner needs another 16th. It's Gunrunner in front. He'll go out a winner. He's the horse of the year, and he's Gunrunner with an unforgettable performance in the Pegasus World Cup.
And Vino Rosso is right to him on the outside. Vino Rosso has taken the lead, and he powers away under Irad Ortiz Jr. Vino Rosso, like father, like son, the son of Curlin, romps in the Longines Breeders' Cup Classic.
Now, here's Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman.
Welcome back. Hour 3 of the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm the Big A, Anthony Stabile, up at Aqueduct. I'm going to run the stymie a little later on today. Special Post 105, Gulfstream 1130, First Post, just a half hour after we go off the air. Bobby Newman's down in South Florida. He'll be at Gulfstream today. Our producer, Lee Delapina, won't be at Gulfstream today. He's back in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. What a great morning so far. Pete Aiello, Steve Asmussen still to come. We got to hear from our friends at First Bet. They like one that I like today. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. Yeah, Bobby, great weekend of racing. You're in for a 9-stakes card down at Gulfstream Park this afternoon, this morning and afternoon, actually.
I've got the car loaded up. I am ready to go as soon as the Equine Forum is over, because First Post at Gulfstream is 11:30 a.m. Eastern time. And aside from those big 9-stake races, they've got great other races on the card. By the way, we misspoke a little bit earlier. The race at Oaklawn, the Southwest, actually goes before the Fountain of Youth. The Southwest Stakes, I think, is scheduled for 5:58 Eastern time, and the Fountain of Youth is 6:10. If I'm not mistaken. Which the good part about that is, you know, you get them right back to back, so you get to watch these great 3-year-olds on the Derby trail within 15 minutes of one another. I think if they run on time,
you know what Cactus Jack would say to that, right?
I do not.
Bang bang, bang bang. One of the many personalities of Mick Foley. Yeah, he'd give you a bang bang. That's how they would go back to back. Yeah, looking forward to it today. We had that poll question for you earlier today. Let's grab the poll question. It disappeared from my Twitter feed. Every now and then the interweb acts up. And, of course, the Equine Forum poll question presented by Owner View and the Thoroughbred Owner Conference. Which Kentucky Derby prep are you looking forward to today? And still holding sway. Fountain of Youth in a prolonged battle with the Southwest. 54-46 as we speak. So there you go. You get to see the leader in the clubhouse live today. That'll be a fun race, and always like to see a little outside the box thinking. That's what you're doing with Fire at Will today. Going to look forward to that. So one of the big participants in the Southwest today is it's Essential Quality taking on Jackie's Warrior. More often than not, when Brad Cox has a big gun, if you will, going to the post, the guest of Sean Clancy's for in the room, Florent Giroux was the would be the go-to guy, but Flo not on this one. Louis Saez is Florent Giroux. He's doing just fine. However, he has the big mare Monomoy Girl going tomorrow in that Byakoa at Oaklawn Park, and it's time now to go in the room with Sean Clancy, presented by ThisIsHorseRacing.com. This week, the former champion steeplechase jockey brings you his unique one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation with none other than Florent Giroux.
Monomoy Girl in front. Monomoy Girl wins the distaff by two lengths on the line for Florent Giroux.
Florent Giroux.
Florent Giroux.
Florent Giroux.
Florent Giroux.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
Hi, I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with jockey Florent Giroux. The 34-year-old French-born jockey began his career in 2007 and has gradually become a mainstay, a go-to Saturday jockey, winning 1,720 races for $110 million and riding the likes of champion Gunrunner and Monomoy Girl. Flo, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Sean.
You're spending the winter at Oaklawn Park, a little bit different for you. How different is it to change places like that? I mean, is there an adjustment when you go to a new track, or what's that like?
Yeah, it is. It's a little bit of an adjustment, but I've been there quite a few times, you know, over the years, you know, shipping for stakes and stuff, so I'm kind of familiar with the track. And some of the trainers are also going back to Kentucky, so it's not really like some of people I'm dealing with, you know, pretty much year-round now with those people.
And you're tied at the top with 15 wins, so it's obviously gone well so far.
Yes, you know, so far very good, you know, got off to a good start, and we got great support, you know, from the horsemen and trainers, and they give us definitely terrific horses to ride and right off the bat, and all credit to them.
How do you fit in Arkansas, French jockey in Arkansas? Does that work out all right?
Yeah, I blend pretty much anywhere I go, pretty easy going, and get along pretty well with anyone. So I like the place, and it's definitely something different here. But the fans, you know, are very very welcome, and they really love the sport of horse racing. And I just wish, you know, there was a little more, you know, town and racetrack like Oaklawn Park, you know, in America for sure.
And the big mare, she comes back on Sunday, Monomoy Girl. First, how excited were you to hear she was coming back for her six-year-old season?
I was very excited, you know. Actually, I would have completely, you know, understand, you know, if they just decide to retire her, you know, and having her as a broom mare. But I think it's great for the sport of horse racing, you know, having horses like her, you know, champion who just keep on going and keep on racing. The longer they stay in training, the longer, the more fan, you know, you attract, you know, to the horse. And I think she has many fans, you know, not only here, but all over the world. And they are just waiting for her to come back and race again.
When did you know she was that good? I mean, I know you got on her early in her career, but was it something that you instantly think, wow, she's different than most? I mean, when do you get that first sensation that a horse is that good?
No, actually, that was my second time. The second time I rode her. I breezed her a few times in the mornings, and right after the Rags to Riches, when she won that stakes at Churchill as a three-year-old very easily, I thought we had something special, because the time was pretty fast, and she did very, very easily. And from that day, I'm like, oh, we may have like a very nice three-year-old, you know, for next year, like a ox caliber, you know.
And what's the conversation with your agent, Doug Brader? I mean, do you come to him and say, man, don't, whatever you do, don't take off this filly? Or do you have those kind of discussions early? What's that like?
No, I mean, we write pretty much, you know, most of the horses for Brad Cox, so we kind of like let Brad, you know, decide, you know, sometime what where he thinks, you know, what's best for us, you know. We work as a team, you know, which I think it's very important. And decision like that, you know, most of the time, Brad, you know, make the decision. But no, when you have a horse like this, of course, after the first ride I rode, first time I rode her, we pretty much knew, you know, everyone, you can find anything faster, so you don't even try to look around and try to find another one.
Is she easy to ride? I mean, I know you've won a lot of races on her. Is she easy? I mean, is there anything tricky to her?
Yeah, no, she looks good on the afternoon, but she's not really like that. You know, she's very quirky. She runs with her head, you know, pretty high, and she kind of like she looks around a lot. You know, looks like she can see pretty much like an ant, you know, on the track. I mean, every little detail she can see, she just, you know, can get her attention very easily, and she. You definitely need to time it right with her because she has the tendency of a bit like slowing down, you know, down the lane.
And is that something you've had to kind of adjust to and learn her idiosyncrasy?
Yeah, exactly. The only time I got beat on her, it's when, you know, I went a little bit too much, you know, I went like not super aggressive, but, you know, I started, you know, whipping her, you know, with the riding crop, and she... Mm-hmm. She just showed me she didn't like it, you know. But at the time, I didn't know, you know. I was in a hitting battle, and I was trying to win the race, and quite lost the race because of that.
Right.
So from that day on, I kind of learned a lot, you know, from her. And now I'm trying to like adjust to when to hit her and at the right time. But usually she doesn't bash me two, three times down the lane, and most of the time zero. So.
How much has she changed? I mean, you've ridden her basically her whole career. Has she changed much?
Yeah, I think physically she's definitely, you know, you can tell now she's a mare, you know, she's not a filly anymore. She's, you know, a little more stockier, you know, a little more muscle. She grown, but she's always been a very intelligent horse, you know, to around the barn and training. She knows when to turn on and when to turn off. And most of the time she turns off, and on race day she just turns on, and she just, you know, explodes, you know.
Yeah, that's the different class, right? I mean, when you get the choice from the really good ones.
Yes, exactly. Very intelligent and very composed, you know, I would say that's our main asset, you know.
What about Gunrunner? Was he similar? Was he same type of horse? Or he easy to ride? What was he like?
Yeah, I would say he was a little bit easier to ride, you know, because he was very generous horse. He give you everything he has, you know, even beyond that. So with him, I feel like, you know, he was trying like 110%. But he was also very, he was a coach, so he was a little bit, you handle those coaches a little bit different than fillies. Fillies, you need to be a little more gentle, you know, and try to get along with them. And sometimes coach, you know, you need to show them, you know, kind of like who's in charge, you know. And but he was pretty cool to be around. He was a nice horse. But you need to watch him, you know, because sometimes, you know, he was a colt and sometimes he could be a little bit studyish at time.
How would those two get along, Gunrunner and Monomoy Girl, if they met in a bar? Would they hit it off or would they clash? What would they be like?
Yeah, no, I think that we, you know, for sure, no. Actually, I don't know if they really cross, you know, in bloodline and stuff, but it would be pretty cool to have a baby, you know, from Gunrunner and her. Would be some kind of amazing, you know, at least for me.
Yeah, for sure. You gotta get the call on that one for sure. your dad was a jockey, but when did you want? I mean, growing up in France, did you always want to be a jockey? What was that like for a kid? I mean, always gonna grow up and be a jockey?
No, I think it really turned on when I was, like, you know, about teenager, when I was, like, maybe, like, 12, you know, like, 11, 12, I started really thinking more about it. But before that, you know, I was used to go to the racetrack sometime and the barns and stuff, but I was not really into it like crazy. I was wanted to play sport, you know, and play with my friends and stuff. And not really into it until, you know, I was, like, I would say 11 or 12 years old.
And then quickly, you set your mind to it then?
Yeah. Actually, my father was a jockey and a trainer, so kind of always been around, you know, pretty much all my life. But it's when right before I the jockey school, and I start being there, and I start really like, you know, doing the work, is when I got reconnected with the horses and also the job, you know, the racing industry, and just clicked on, and say, you know, I just never left, and really like and enjoy my job, and I think that's the most important.
And coming to America, was that a decision? Did you come here just on a visit to kind of check it out, or were you?
Yeah, exactly. I first came, I was, I just wanted to check it out, you know, like I, you know, you've seen things on TV, like, you know, Breeders' Cup races and stuff. So I'm like, one day I would like to come visit, you know, and learn, you know, new things, you know, about riding and stuff, you know, riding differently and kind of like, you know, about the American style. And I came here and I just really liked it. And I thought there was more opportunity here, you know, with the country being way bigger and more racetrack and different stuff, you know, running at the same time than it was in France. So after a few months, I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to give it a try. But when I first came, it was not my intention to be, all right, I'm going to be there and stay there, because I went back to France and took me about almost like a year to get my my paperwork ready, you know, visa and stuff like that.
And is it everything you expected? I mean, what's it been like? Has it been tougher or different or everything you hoped for?
No, I think it's been exactly how I expected. You know, it was not easy at first, but I think here in this country, when you work hard, you know, good things can happen to you. And I just keep on working hard, and things just happen to fall in place, you know. And also a little bit of luck, you know. I think it's like everything in life.
Yeah, a little bit of both, I guess. It's you got to get lucky, but you also got to work hard. I mean, that's kind of the lesson for a younger rider coming along. That's the advice you'd give: work hard and hope you get lucky, I guess.
Exactly. I think you need to be. Anything is very important to surround you by good people too. You know, if you're surrounded, you know, with very good people, you know, always, you know, point you the right direction and give you a good state of mind. Instead of like negative people who, you know, doesn't want to work very hard, then it's not going to be good. But if you surround yourself, you know, with good people and you put your mind into it, I think good things are going to happen.
And your style of riding, did you try to emulate American jockeys, or did you kind of take some of your French style and kind of meld it to American style, or what was that like?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I think you can watch guys, but I think it's very hard to say, oh, I'm going to be like this guy or this guy, because we're all different, you know. So, no, I think just riding, you know, different jokes in general, but I think in France, you know, since, you know, Cassius Mussen, you know, arrived, you know, in the late, you know, 80s, everybody kind of adapt to his style, so we kind of ride, you know, the American way over there. I mean, it's more turf racing and stuff like that, but it's not as... it's not like we ride like more like in England or Ireland, where they're very distinct, you know, riding style. I think France, Spain, Italy, they kind of ride a little more the American way, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. When you watch Frankie Dettori and Cash Asmussen, yeah, it's almost a blend between the two. I mean, you kind of take the best of both worlds, probably, and create your own style. Growing up, who were your heroes, your idols growing up? Who were the guys? Was it Dettori or Asmussen?
I mean, when I first came, you know, I was watching, of course, you know, Asmussen. But when I started riding, actually, he just retired. So it was hard to follow someone, you know, who does not ride. But in France, it's always has been Christophe Soumillon. He's extremely talented jockey, Olivier Peslier. Then later on came, you know, of course, you know, Frankie Dettori, you know, in the international stage. And he's always been my favorite. I think he's, my opinion, the best jockey I ever seen ride and the best jockey I ever rode, you know.
Who's the toughest guy to ride against?
Well, actually, he passed away, but I really do think one of the strongest finishers I ever rode was definitely Gary Gomez.
Yeah,
great. Super. I mean, like, down the end with him, you're like, you better get tied on, because he's extremely strong. But no, I think there's tons of great jockeys even still riding now. You know, I think guy like, you know, Johnny Velasquez, you know, or, you know, Irad or Jose and Javier Castellano and Julian and a bunch of like the top jockeys. When you have the best horse, you know, it's hard to go by, you know. I think it's horse racing first, you know. I don't think it's jockey racing.
No question. Well, you're right up there with those guys. When you became an American citizen in 2018, I know you took the oral test the day before riding Gunrunner in the Pegasus. What was more nerve-wracking, the test or the race?
I don't know. The test, I kind of knew I was going to. I studied pretty good for it, so I think it's just basically just, you know, a question they're asking you and stuff like that, so I kind of knew I was going to pass it. And Gunrunner, it's funny because there was not much pressure for the race. You know, the Pegasus was all bonus. It was a very important race, you know, with a lot of cash, you know. But the horse was going to be retired no matter what the next following day. He was already crowned, you know, Horse of the Year. It was all gravy, so I was really confident, and I think that's definitely one of the races I enjoyed the most, you know, because it was just no pressure. It was just, like I said, it's all bonus.
And what about Manamoy Gar on Sunday? Is that the same kind of feeling, all bonus? Or describe what that'll be like, the nerves or energy to it. I mean, what would that be like for you?
No, I think I'm always confident when I ride out because I know what I got, you know, underneath me. But, no, I would say with her, I would say not I'm nervous, but I'm excited. I want her to do good, you know. But I think the biggest accomplishment for her was definitely last year, you know, winning, you know, our first race. I was very, not nervous, but I was very anxious about our first race of the layoff, because when you bring back a champion like this after such a long layoff, there's always question, you know, people, if they run bad, they say, oh, they should have retired this horse, why they did this, why they did that. And I think for the whole, you know, we all went together, and, you know, with owners and, of course, you know, Brad and his team. And that's the race, you know, I was the most anxious about. But no, I like to ride her, and I enjoy, you know, every minute when I'm on her back.
No doubt. She's a great champion. And Flo, you're a great champion too. It's been fun to watch your career develop and grow into the jockey you've become. And thanks for being on the show. Good luck this weekend, and all the best in anything you do.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. In the room with Sean Clancy, Florent Giroux. He's got Monomoy Girl tomorrow in the Bayakoa. We'll take a break. Come back. Pete Aiello, racetrack announcer from Gulfstream Park, and a preview of a big day of racing down in Hallandale Beach. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Oscar Performance, the pinnacle of success as a precocious juvenile, and again at three.
Oscar Performance, bravo! He wins the juvenile turf.
Oscar Performance has won the Secretary of State's.
Oscar Performance goes all the way in the Belmont Derby Invitational.
And the pinnacle of success at four, equaling the world record for a mile in the Grade 3 Poker and dominating the competition in the Grade 1 Woodbine Mile.
But it's Oscar Performance shrugs them off. A gate-to-wire winner.
Oscar Performance, standing at Millridge.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Adina Springs bred and raced the best son of Hall of Famer Ghost Sapper, champion, multiple Grade 1 winner, and fellow Hall of Famer Shaman Ghost, who became the first horse in three decades to reel off this historic Grade 1 double.
And it's going to be won by Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile. Shaman Ghost has beaten Midnight Storm.
Seeing is believing with Shaman Ghost. Learn more at AdinaStallions.com.
Hello, I'm Junior Alvarado, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
The rest not of consequence with 5/16 to run.
On the outside, Tiz the Law bids up boldly now to challenge Ette Indian for the top. Chivalry at a huge number cuts the corner and tries to fight on. Gouverneur Morris is loose and charging on the far outside. Less than a quarter of a mile to go. Manny Franco sets down Tiz the Law and he's moving away. Chivalry is now outrunning Ette Indian for second. Gouverneur Morris is now fourth. Less than a 16th to go in the Florida Derby, and it's time to respect the law. Tiz the Law is your Florida Derby winner. He won by three over Chivalry second, Ette Indian third, then Gouverneur Morris and Independence Hall to complete the high five in 150 flat.
Our next guest, Gulfstream Park track announcer Pete Aiello, was on the call of the 2020 Florida Derby. It was all Tiz the Law. We'll see if any of the runners in today's Fasig Tipton Fountain of Youth at Gulfstream can take the next step forward to that Florida Derby 4 weeks from today. Welcome back to the Equine Forum. Before we talk to Pete, it's time to help you pick a winner as we take a look at today's first bet brought to you by our friends at First Bet.
And now, today's first bet.
Happy to see that today's first bet is a horse that I'm on today. It's in Gulfstream Park, race 13, the grade 3. I love saying this, too. The very one stakes goes over 5:36 p.m. Eastern time. It's the number 7, Bacchanalia. She's 8-1 on the morning. Let me see. First bet win projection. It's 14 points higher than any other contender in the field. She ranks top 2 in 7 of the 15 most important first bet factors for this race. You get leading jockey Red Ortiz Jr. and Chad Brown teaming up. She went better in a team drill with stablemate and fellow the very one entrant, California Queen, in video at XBTV. You can check it out over there. And she exits a win over the course for her first stakes bid. All of that makes the number 7, Bacchanalia, in race 13, the very one, today's first bet. We'll be back right after this, after a word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number 1, st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
All right. Thanks to our friends at First Bet for Bacchanalia today. Hopefully, our guest, Pete Aiello, is going to call her home. I would like to see 6 or 7 to 1 today. It is the one and only Pete Aiello from Gulfstream Park. Pete, it's Anthony and Bobby Newman here on the Equine Forum. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to talk to you guys.
What's happening?
Not very much. 14 races today, as you know. And 11:30 start. If anyone's wondering about weather, it's beautiful here. There's not a cloud in the sky. So I think we're going to be in good shape as far as that goes.
Give it a minute. Bobby Newman will be there in a little while. Maybe he'll bring some clouds with him.
they follow me around. It is what it is. But I'm looking forward to a great day of racing. And as Pete mentioned, it's perfect weather. And it's a long afternoon for you, Pete, starting with when you do the changes, probably right around 11 o'clock, and you walk out that announcer's booth probably closer to 6:30 tonight. It's a long day, my friend.
I don't think I'll get out of there. I'm not ever got to hear that early either, because I got to make the morning line for Thursday before I leave. So, and then we got 12 more tomorrow. So if anyone's listening to this and not a fan of mine, feel free to bash me tomorrow. But if you could wait till tomorrow, that would be appreciated.
Yes, mute a lot of not looking at social media. I know what it's like now, my friend. I do. I know what it's like. still, Yeah, believe me. You still get up for these big days, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. Had the psyche up music going down the way down here this morning, and
What do we listen to?
A little AC/DC always cranks me up.
Very nice.
Get a little live version of Thunderstruck, and that's usually about what I need.
That's not bad at all.
If things are ever going really bad, just put in Break Stuff by Limp Bizkit, and you'll be good to go for the rest of the day.
I've also been known to go with a little, why am I struggling for the name now? The German guys that pump you up. Come on, you guys got to know
Du Hast? Not the guys that sing Du Hast?
Yeah.
Why am I blanking on their name?
But I've been known to crank that.
Rammstein. Rammstein.
Yeah, there we go. There it is. Yeah. There we go.
Unbiased, obviously you're in the booth, you got to do your thing. What race are you looking most forward to today? Is it the Fountain of Youth? I mean, that phase of the Fountain of Youth, we could have a potential superstar in there. Greatest Honor has been something since he's gotten down to South Florida.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of good races. I think the Palm Beach is probably the most underrated race on the card because I think there's some talented turf horses in there, and I don't know that anybody has really established themselves as the leading three-year-old turf horse yet. And I think that there's a couple of horses in there like Annex and Scarlet Sky that I think they can lay claim to that if they run as well as they look like they're going to. I mean, the way the Mott Barn's going, I mean, he's firing on all cylinders no matter what he runs. So a horse like Annex, if I had to pick one to bet on, that would be the one.
One race that we haven't talked about really much at all on the program yet today is the Grade 2 Devona Dale, 3-year-old fillies going 1 mile, return of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Filly Champ VQuist. You later 7-5 on the morning line. What do you expect from VQuist today? And if it's not VQuist, who is it in this race?
Well, that's a very good question, Bobby, because when I am full disclosure, she's only 7-5 because I couldn't get the math to work out with her being any shorter. I have enough 20-1 shots as it is, but I mean, I think you're probably looking at odds on her when it all gets said and done, just because, you know, outside of the Mott layoff horse and Ken McPeak's Crazy Beautiful, and, you know, Lady Traveler's out now. So, you know, there's really not a whole lot of horses that at least on resume are going to be able to match drives with VQuist. And the question is how cranked is she? I mean, that's always the question when you're talking about making your first start of the 3-year-old campaign. But, I mean, I think if you're Butch Reed, you got to be pretty happy, because I think at 75%, VQuist still wins this race.
I couldn't think of her name during the week for some reason. Well, at first glance, when I looked at this race, and I'm a big Neil Foy fan, full disclosure, well, shocker, I like a Mott horse. But I've been a fan of this filly since day one. And I remember this shock in your voice a couple of years back. I was down there covering Fountain of Youth the day Jaywalk. You kind of look at that race and you think, oh, Jaywalk. And then in the back of my head, I hear Butch saying, I don't know if I have her 100% cranked. There weren't too many races that shocked me more than Jaywalk's performance that afternoon. So I don't know if that's just stuck in my head. I look at VQuist and I say to myself, who is going to get her today? I landed with Neil Foy, but yeah, that's... again, you know, end of February, you got a chance to have two of the bigger choices, bigger favorites on the last Friday in April and the first Saturday in May in Louisville.
And that's a really good cautionary tale about the Jaywalk situation. I had actually not remembered the connection there. So, listeners, pay attention to what Tony just said, because that's definitely fresh in this historical framework here.
You know, Pete, aside from the great stakes on the card at Gulfstream, these big stake days always seem to have one or two really high-powered maiden races on deck. And one of them today is the fifth race. And it's really a matchup, at least morning line-wise, of Collaborate for Safi Joseph, who took a whole lot of money in his debut sprinting back on February 6th. And Benny from the Bronx, who is a half-brother to Charlatan, how aware are you of these kind of things as far as breeding wise when you're making the line, and you know, where do you expect the public to go when they're betting on this race?
Well, I think that that's a great question. I mean, I was aware of the Benny from the Bronx charlatan connection. So I kind of made Benny from the Bronx kind of, you know, come for him if you want him, but I'm not going to declare him a winner already, especially because, you know, as you said, Collaborate took a ton of money against a pretty salty field. I mean, Democracy was a very impressive winner, even though he only won by a nose. It was just the way he did it. That was a stacked field, and this horse came running, so it looks like he wants more ground. I would not be surprised in the slightest if Benny from the Bronx goes favored, and heavily so. And then you got a horse like Blitz to Win, who's coming out of a third-place run behind Candyman Rocket. So, you know, if Benny from the Bronx goes favored, fine, but at the same time, if I make a first-time starter favorite and he doesn't go favored, I'm going to get a lot more heat than I would if I have the established form horse favorite and then they come for the first timer. So that was the way I looked at it from a mentality standpoint, making the line.
I think you made the right horse the favorite in there. Collaborate had a tough trip that day. It was a loaded race, like you said. We'll see. I don't know who Benny from the Bronx is named after. You see, you got to be careful with Peter Brandt. People think because Peter Brandt of who he is, Peter Brandt's not above naming one after a wrestler. Kowalski is named after Killer Kowalski. So you have to be very careful. I have no idea who Benny from the Bronx is. With a name like that, I don't know if I want to start inquiring. I know Nikki the Vest for Bob LaPenta is named after the bartender at Rao's in Manhattan. But I don't know who Benny from the Bronx is, and I don't care to.
Wasn't in Carlito's Way, Benny Blanco from the Bronx? Wasn't that the guy who killed Carlito?
I think you're right,
Carlito's
Bobby.
Way?
That's what I read on Twitter earlier this week.
Yeah, we'll get Mr. Brandt to confirm that at one point. All right, Pete, listen, we'll let you go. You got to be close to changes down there. Have a great day. I didn't see any easy money on the card, but maybe you do.
Nah, I don't either. The only easy money is my tank be on an E by race 14. That's the bet of the day, but I don't know where you can get on.
First bet, I'm sure, is laying some kind of line on that. We'll figure it out. We'll find something. Thanks, Pete. Good luck today, my man.
Talk to you, boys. Talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Pete.
One and only Pete Aiello, racetrack announcer down at Gulfstream Park. Like all of our guests, Pete will receive some apparel from Embrace the Race for the horse racing fan in your life or for yourself. You can be greedy when it comes to horse racing. Embrace your passion over at embracetherace.com. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We started the show with a Hall of Famer. We'll end the show with a Hall of Famer. Trainer Steve Asmussen comes up next. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Justify, a four-time Grade 1 winner, Eclipse Champion 3-year-old, Horse of the Year, and the only undefeated Triple Crown winner. By Sire of Sires, Scat Daddy, Justify's first foals sold for up to $600,000 at the recent November sales, while his in-foal mares were led by the three-time Grade 1 winning daughter of Uncle Mo, Bast, who sold for $4.2 million to Spendthrift Farm. Justify has covered over 80 Grade 1 winners or dams of Grade 1 winners in his first 2 years at Ashford. Call the team at Ashford today to book your mare while there are still seasons available.
Pin Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Golden 60, Furore, here's the post. Golden 60, Golden
60 in a wonderful stretch battle has knocked off a gallant Furore.
Golden 60, a five-year-old son of Darley Stallion Medaglia d'Oro, got up in the final strides to capture the Group 1 Hong Kong Gold Cup and notched his 13th consecutive win in doing so. He's won 16 of 17 career starts and is just four shy of Silent Witness's 17 straight wins. Look for Golden 60 next to go the about mile and a half distance in the Group 1 Champions and Chater Cup on May 23rd. Golden 60 is your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Medaglia d'Oro, the leading sire by average at the 2020 yearling sales. Current three-year-olds include Grade 3 Withers winner Risk Taking, Grade 3 Las Virginas winner Moonlight d'Oro, and up-and-comer Prevalence. Learn more about Medaglia d'Oro and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
I'm Manny Franco, and I listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It's Jackie's Warrior with a 2.5-length lead. Reinvestment Risk. Ask for more now as the field comes into the stretch. Mutazabek is in third, and now there's 3/16 to the finish. And it is Jackie's Warrior. Jackie's Warrior's got a 4-length lead. Reinvestment Risk in second, and Mutazabek is third. And this is an impressive performance here for Jackie's Warrior, who makes it 3-for-3 in his two-year-old year. He wins the Grade 1 Run Happy Hopeful. And the time for the 7 furlongs, 1 minute, 21 and 1/5 seconds.
Closing day at Saratoga, it was all Jackie's Warrior. He took him on a merry chase, beat a first of two Grade 1 wins. He would go on to win the Champagne before a little bit of a toast up as the 4-5 favorite in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, efforting to get Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen on the phone. Talking to Andy Serling on Talking Horses yesterday, Bobby. And we were going back and forth. Who do you think is going to be favorite today, Essential Quality or Jackie's Warrior?
I think Essential Quality will be favored. It's hard to get past the fact that he shows an undefeated resume and that he is the Eclipse Award-winning two-year-old champion from last year and that he defeated Jackie's Warrior last time out. But he really had it all his way, where Jackie's Warrior had it the other way. So I think there are people, plenty of people like you out there that are thinking Jackie's Warrior has a much more advantageous position today than he did in the Breeders' Cup. He couldn't get the lead in the Breeders' Cup his first time around two turns, and he just didn't run his best race. I don't know how he doesn't get the lead today, and his second time around two turns should be better than his first time around two turns. Essential Quality probably going to have to lay a little bit closer if he wants to run down Jackie's Warrior this afternoon.
You know, that's there's a little bit of an intangible in here, as there always is in horse racing, the wet track. Essential Quality's never run on a wet track. Jackie's Warrior hasn't. In fact, in the field of seven, just the two outside runners, Woodhouse and Spielberg. Woodhouse ran third in the mud in an allowance race over Oaklawn, going 1/16. As a son of Spitestown, out of a Malibu Moon mare, you'd imagine he was not going to have a problem with a wet track. And Spielberg ran fourth in the Bob Lewis over a course labeled Good out at Santa Anita last time behind stablemate Medina Spirit. He didn't run all that well. He got beat a pretty long way, almost. He got beat a little under a dozen lengths that day. I do wonder what the racetrack, what the track condition does to this matchup today.
You're right. I think breeding-wise, I prefer Essential Quality for the wet track, being by Tappet out of an Elusive Quality mare. I certainly prefer Essential Quality going longer distances breeding-wise to Jackie's Warrior, who's by McLean's Music out of an AP 500 mare. Watching the races yesterday, and the track was muddy at the beginning of the card at Oaklawn and then sloppy for most of the day, it still seemed like a fair track. It was a mess out there, but there were horses who were running well up front, and there were horses that were running well from well off the pace. So unlike some other racetracks that seem to have a real bias when the track gets wet, yesterday, at least at Oaklawn, it seemed to be playing pretty fair.
Yeah, and, you know, I had some of the races on, just keeping an eye on what was going to go on today and tomorrow with Monomoy Girl making her seasonal debut. It seemed like it just played fair. It seemed like there was one horse on the card whose name is escaping me now that I wanted to bet back from last time that won. And I don't know if you and Chuck were on the air, and Chuck did a great job filling in this week. Thank him for me. The Ron Moquette Ricardo Santana Jr. horse went up 5-1 and got the job done, came up the inside. But then, you know, you look at that and you start to wonder, well, is the inside good? Is the outside good? Saw a horse an hour later win right down the crown of the track. So it didn't seem to be any kind of bias there. Be curious to see. We'll see how it unfolds today. Looking forward to seeing that matchup. That was our poll today. Poll question over at HRRN this morning, presented by Owner View and the Thoroughbred Owner Conference. Which Kentucky Derby prep are you looking most forward to today? And it's down to 52-48. Fountain of Youth still holding on to that lead. No other comments from anybody. I don't know why everybody's so bashful this morning. But, yeah, so 52-48. You'll be there live. You'll be there live for one of them. That'll be fun.
Be there live for the one at Gulfstream and be watching just like everybody else, the one at Oaklawn Park. And then, you know what? I'll be at Oaklawn Park in 2 weeks for the running of the Rebel Stakes. That'll be a lot of fun. It's always fun getting to Oaklawn. I'll tell you what, Steve Asmussen, we talked about Pete Aiello having a long day, 14 races at Gulfstream. Steve Asmussen has horses in 10 of the 11 races at Oaklawn today. He and his team are going to be tired tonight.
Yeah. All but the last race. And when we were setting up the interview, Steve was telling me a funny story. We're going to take one more break. When we come back, we'll hopefully have Steve Asmussen for you, and we'll wrap up this edition of the Equine Forum. You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Gainsway Stallion Caracanti is off to a strong start at stud. A leading sire amongst his crop by percentage of stakes horses, top runners by Caracanti include graded stakes winners Kenzai Warrior.
But Kenzai Warrior is sticking his head down and getting up. Kenzai Warrior wins the Horace Hill.
Sole Volante.
On the outside, Sole Volante runs by the leader. It's Sole Volante in front and going away.
Two-year-old stakes winner Spanish Love Affair.
16th to go, Spanish Love Affair almost home. Spanish Love Affair lives up to the hype and wins it 1-2.
And dual surface dynamo, Princess Grace.
16th to go, Princess Grace still in front. Pasta Plate is trying hard, but she's second to Princess Grace, streaking under the wire, the three-length winner.
A rising star with greatest stakes winners on both dirt and turf, Caracanti, standing at Gainsway.
Racing fans, you can watch every Santa Anita race free of charge at santaanita.com/live, and you can watch and wager at First Bet. That's first.com/bet. Make plans to join us online this weekend on Saturday. Three-year-olds will go 1 mile on turf in the $100,000 Pasadena Stakes, and on Sunday, California breds 4 and up will go 1 mile on the main track in the $100,000 Tis Now. Looking ahead to one of the biggest days of the year, next Saturday, March 6th, we'll have 5 stakes, including the Grade 1 Santa Anita Handicap, the Grade 2 San Felipe, the Grade 1 Frankie Kilro Mile, and the Grade 2 San Carlos. That's all on Big Cap Day, Saturday, March 6th. And don't forget a pair of low takeout wagers late in the card each racing day, the $5 Golden Hour Double and a $1 Golden Hour Pick 4. With first post time at 12:30, join us early at 11:20 a.m. as track announcer Frank Miramati and Tom Quigley handicap each day's card at santaanita.com/live.
There's a corner of Kentucky in Bourbon County, which some refer to as the Promised Land. There's something in the soil and water that make it something special. So special that some of the world's greatest horsemen have staked their claim in the soil just outside of Paris. Iconic names such as Claiborne, Coolmore, Stone, and Darley grace the fence lines which have housed champions for generations. The name Alapa shines as a tribute to the Gilded Age, sharing the stature and grandeur of its neighbors. Born from the wealth, passion, and imagination of Edward Sims, no expense was spared to fulfill his vision. Sims was in the same league as John Madden and Arthur B. Hancock Sr. as a commercial breeder. The torch has been passed. Welcome to Hill and Dale at Alapa.
This is Florent Giroux, and you are listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They're coming to the top of the stretch in the Jim Dandy. On the outside, it's Jesus' team, and on the inside, it is Celtic Striker. Jesus' team has come away with the lead here. It's Jesus' team in front as they come down for the eighth pole, but here is Mystic Guide on the outside. Mystic Guide and Jesus' team. Dr. Post is in fourth with just the 16th of the finish, and on the outside, looking for an upset, is Live Your Beast Life, but it is Mystic Guide with those white blinkers to win the Grade 2 Jim Dandy. Live Your Beast Life was second. Then Jesus' team, and the 3-5 favorite, Dr. Post, was fourth.
Johnny I on the call of the Jim Dandy. Normally, it's a prep for the Travers. Last year, it was run well after the Travers. Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on HRRN. If you've missed anything this week here on the network, head back over to horseracingradio.net. Take a listen in podcast form. Rachel Keithan was the guest for Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. We had a heck of a Prisnet.com call-in show, as usual. Bobby talked about some of the stakes earlier today. If you want to hear all of our opinions, head on over to the website to listen to the weekend stakes preview presented by Naira Betts. 14, well now 13 stakes in all. We kicked it off the right way, gave you the winner of the John Battaglia Memorial last night. Head over to horseracingradio.net to take a listen to podcast form. This will be up, Equine Forum will be up shortly as well. Mystic Guide returns today off a second place finish in the Jockey Club Gold Cup at Belmont Park. In that Razorback at Oak Lawn Park. Nice little spot for his return, Bobby.
Nice spot. And this is a horse I know that you and I both liked a lot as a three-year-old. Looking forward to seeing if he progresses as a four-year-old. I loved him in the Peter Pan last year. And to be perfectly honest, I think he just got a really, really bad ride from a really good rider as he was taken way back. And that's just not what he wants to do. Got a much different trip in the Jim Dandy, laying only about 5 lengths off the pace instead of about 10 lengths back, and got the win. And then ran in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. And although he wasn't able to hold off Happy Saver, he did finish in front of Tacitus. And that's not always an easy task. Coming back from Mike Stidham, who does very well with these extended layoff type runners, Mystic Guide, looking forward to seeing him, how he'll do today. And he's another one. You mentioned Essential Quality, Jackie's Warrior, trying a possible wet track for the first time. That's also what Mystic Guide will be doing. He has run on fast tracks all 6 of his career starts, and it looks like all of his works have come on fast tracks. He's by Go Sapper out of an AP Indy mare. You wouldn't think a wet track would hurt him, but you never know until they try.
No, you never know. And a horse that already has a wet track win. We're efforting to get Steve Asmussen for you. We haven't been successful as of yet, but Silver Prospector has a win over a wet track. It's at Churchill Downs. He's run a couple of times on a wet track at Oaklawn. He ran okay in the Smarty Jones, not so great in the Rebel last year when he had a little bit of traffic on the turn. But You know, he's a horse that's handled a wet track in the past. Hunk of Burning Love was going to be on the lead. Mailman Money's 2-for-2 on a wet track. Owen Dale ran one of the better races of his career on a wet track. So Mr. Guide, unlike the two heavies in the Southwest who haven't tried wet tracks, some of the horses against Mr. Guide have, and they've had some success on them.
Right. So, you know, he has a kind of a built-in excuse already if he does not win today. But I would guess if Mike Stidham's going to run him in the race and with his breeding, he should be able to handle this race. Listen, even if it's a fast track, I don't think Mystic Guy just lays over this field. This is a talented field going a mile and a 16th in the Razorback. I know you're a huge fan of Asmus and Silver Prospector. Owendale is a nice horse in his own right. He's getting a rider change to Joel Rosario today. We'll see how that goes. And there's some others that have performed well at Oaklawn. Unlike the Southwest, where, to be honest, I'd be shocked if either Essential Quality or Jackie's Warrior didn't come away with the win, even with the wet racetrack. Here, I think it's kind of up in the air, no matter what the track condition in the Razorback.
Yeah. That should be a fun race. They have another stakes race on the card, the Spring Fever. Those three races, the three stakes races, races 7 and 9 at Aqueduct, comprise a cross-country pick 5 today. That should be a fun sequence. Looking forward to that. Got all the action down at Gulfstream today. Now, you'll be at the races today. How do you focus just on Gulfstream? Will you have the TV? Will your finger get a workout today changing the channel?
Well, luckily, where I'll sit, there are a few TVs, so I don't actually have to change a channel. And just like you, I've done a lot of my homework already, so it's kind of getting there, applying who's scratched, if there's any rider changes, things like that to it, trying to figure out what kind of tickets we can put together for some pick fours and pick fives. Like you, I'm more of a horizontal wager type of guy as opposed to a vertical. Not so much tries and supers, much prefer the pick threes, pick fours, and pick fives. And they start early, as all of the, you know, it wasn't long ago that, I mean, there was even just one double at a racetrack. Then they went to an early and a late double. Now there's rolling doubles and there's pick fives everywhere and pick fours everywhere, rolling pick threes. So trying to pick the right spots and see if we can come up with a couple horses to key on at Oaklawn and at Gulfstream Park, and maybe even a little Aqueduct as well. See if we can listen, the money is the same color no matter where you make it. We don't have to just bet one place.
Will you correct anyone at Gulfstream today who doesn't say the very one?
Will I correct anyone or will I correct everyone? That is the correct question, my friend, because like you, I just think it's hilarious. Jay Pribman and I talked about that. Jay Pribman from the Racing Form. I think that's one of his favorite things as well. The very one stakes. And I think actually in my past performances, it's listed incorrectly. I think it just says the very one instead of the very one. So it's most people get it wrong.
Well, in the online version of the DRF, it says the very one. So very excited about that. Very excited about that. And again, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to bring you Steve Asmussen. Hope everything's okay. We'd like to thank our other guests this morning, Hall of Famer Shug McGahee, Pete Aiello from Gulfstream Park, the racetrack announcer. He's got 14 for you starting at 11:30. Again, special post at Gulfstream, 11:30. Special post here at Aqueduct, 105. Thanks to Saul Kuhman. Thanks to trainer Mike Maker. Florent Giroux was in the room with our man Sean Clancy. Strolled through racing history with Kurt Becker. Talked about the great 49er. Jerry Brooks was our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. All of our guests will receive some apparel from Embrace the Race. Embrace your passion over at EmbraceTheRace.com. Been a long week for you, my friend. You've been doing holding it down on race day, popping in with me here on this equal. Thankfully, you were here this morning. That could have been ugly earlier today. Thank you for holding the fort down.
I appreciate it, buddy. Love doing this. And before we go, I wanted to ask your opinion. One thing we didn't, since you haven't been on race day all most of the week, what are your opinions on the Saudi Cup we saw last week and both Charlatan and Nixco going down in defeat?
Charlatan easily ran the race of his life, just being hounded every step of the way. And then, you know, Mishriff looked like at one point he was just going to roll on by, and Charlatan gave him all he could handle. Excellent race. I know a few of the runners have already moved over to Dubai. They're going to try and pull off that double. Tacitus, one of them. The only reason I bring up Tacitus is a couple of these horses tried to do it last year, and then, of course, the Dubai World Cup was postponed because of the COVID-19 and then eventually canceled. So, yeah, I'll be curious to see what these horses. No Channel Maker coughed up a lead late. He'll go over there as well. So looking forward to seeing what these horses do second time in the Middle East with a race under their belts now for the year. But, yeah, Mishriff, Charles from Mississippi, gave him out on the BrisNet.com call-in show. So you got 19-1 if you listen on Thursday night. Another reason to tune into HRRN. It's good for your wallet.
That's fantastic.
All right, my man. Thank you again. Fantastic. This was a lot of fun. We'll do it again, I'm sure, when the Baron needs somebody to pinch hit.
I look forward to it, buddy. Have a great weekend.
As do I. All right, that'll wrap it up. Again, thanks to all of our guests this morning. Head back over to horseracingradio.net to catch up on anything you missed this week. Weekend Stakes Preview presented by Naira Betts. Got 13 stakes for you today and tomorrow. For Bobby and Lee, I'm the Big A. I hope you have a lucky weekend. I hope you win all your photo finishes. We'll talk to you Wednesday for race day.